It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And so here we go, off and running on a brand new year. It is, in fact, the fourth day of January 2021. This is the Horn Headon.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. It's also where you go if you'd like to click on chat room and be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that is the chat room during the hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And if you pop in now, you will be greeted by early arrivers Anatole and Roger in Oregon and Squeaky, and capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who has elected for this first broadcast day of 2021 not to fold space, even though he is a third stage guild navigator. Hi, I'm Robin, and it's More In Monday on the Horn. You know, after all the considerable surprise and shock and drama of Thursday night's program, and then for those of you who watched it, the interview that Annette and I did, that's Agnes, by the way. Agnes means lamb, you know. It was. There were parts of it that were not easy, but it is liberating, and nonetheless, there's a show to be done, and so I wanted to just remind, or by way of reminder, there's a story that I think is applicable about a young boy who goes and has his, he turns 13 and he goes and he has his bar mitzvah. And he says, "Today I am a man. Tomorrow I'm still failing algebra in seventh grade." And there's, I just love that. There's a lot of truth to that for me. So we'll go forward. You know, things, but the program is what the program is, and it can't help but be the program. So we will go forward in that regard. Every program here at the Horn, of course, begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. January 1st was Friday, so of course we've got a lot of thank yous to catch up with. It being 1, 2, 3, 4 days. Yeah, it's not often we see that, but thank you very kindly to our buddy Bob in North Carolina. Thank you to Shorty in L.A. Thank you, Rusty. Thank you, Joseph. Thank you to our buddy Tom in sunny San Rafael. Thank you to Terry in Amherst, where only the H is silent. Thank you to Chris in Germany. Thank you, Elizabeth, thank you. Rocco, thank you. Mike in Cascadia, thank you. Stephen, and thank you to Gene and Ann across the pond. Thank you, Janice. Thank you, John. Thank you, Faith and Andrew. Thank you, Bill. Thank you, Mick. Thank you to Scott in San Diego. Thanks to Thomas. Thank you, Paul. Thank you, David. Thank you, Joey. Thank you to Cecilia, who got us started just before the program. And thank you to Jeremy, first past the post. And what that means is that there is $280 remaining. And today is, of course, the first broadcast day of the month of January 2021. And that means Bruce's Memorial Challenge is on the table, courtesy of our buddy Gary, labor man, and courtesy of Ralph's in Wisconsin, and courtesy of Chris in Germany. And so if we can raise that remainder, that $280, those three magnificent folks will, in Bruce's memory, double it and get us off to a rousing start in this new year. Thank you again to Gary, to Chris, and to Ralph's. Thank you so very much indeed. And thanks to all of you who are partial sponsors and make live, liberal, independent broadcasting possible. Thank you immensely. And I think we've got enough morality stacked up like cordwood from the long holiday weekend to keep us going for a month of more in Mondays. I feel absolutely certain about it, as a matter of fact. Oh, yeah, yeah. What was that? There's a message there. Wait, I don't think you did the "Hi, I'm Bob" part. Good, yeah, this is going to be fun. Oh, it sure is. That's Brother Deacon Asa. Wait, I think you forgot to do the "Hi, I'm Bob" part. And yes, as Randy points out, commercial-free broadcasting. It goes a long way, really, the commercial-free part. I've gotten lovely notes from people. Kevin in Colorado Springs. Congrats, Robin, and can you possibly put the show that you and Agnes did on Saturday morning with Terry up on the Horn website so that those of us who can't access the Facebook can listen to it? Thanks. And once again, congrats on coming out. Feels good to come out into the sunlight, doesn't it? It feels so very good indeed. I can't do that sua sponte, Kevin, but I can certainly ask Terry and Nikki for their permission if they will let me use their audio to further spread the reach of the program. Thank you, Terrace. Thank you very kindly for that. Tara saying, I'll use Robin from now on. We're all going to make mistakes. I'm making mistakes already. And so don't anybody sweat it, okay? Earlier, I had a note from Kyle to begin the program. Funny moment involving my family this weekend, and it made me a proud brother. My father, the resident maggot moron in our family, was going on about, and I wish I was kidding, how the reason there's so many trans people is because parents convinced them all they were a different gender when they were 6 years old. I'm sorry to do this voice on your dad, Kyle, but I hope it's okay. Because they didn't want a child of that gender. And my 12-year-old sister goes, what the frick? Did you get that from the guy who believes in lizard people and gay frogs from water? Yes, she knows who Alex Jones is, only because I was laughing at someone making fun of him one day, and I had to explain the water making the frogs gay thing. My father was actually speechless, and as a result, everyone's brain quit hurting. Anyway, Happy New Year, everyone, because I miss saying that on 1-1. Less than 16 days until Orange Asshole is out of office. Georgia runoffs tomorrow. Yeah, I'm nervous already, LOL, says Kyle. Hey, Kyle, tell your baby sister that we're all really proud of her. 12 years old and already making Alex Jones jokes. There's a future ahead of that child. And this, for the first time, Robin! Fly, Robin, fly. Last Thursday night, New Year's Eve, I went to the chiropractor and then for a much-needed massage. When I came out to my car around 9:15, I noticed that Billable Rick had called me four times and sent me two emails. One of the emails was titled, "Are you listening to this?" I remembered those are the exact words I used when I texted Rick to tell him that the Norman Goldman show was going off the air. I thought for sure the artist formerly known as Bob had turned himself into a symbol and was leaving the airwaves. Ooh, I need to find a symbol. I thought to myself, what the hell happened to Bob? Well, as it turned out, the artist formerly known as Bob did not fly the coop or fly away, even though he turned himself into a robin. Here comes Jeffrey. Jeffrey says, "Don't worry, Robin. All the horns support you in your life-changing decision. For you, Robin, may the sky be your only limit and let your new endeavors not burden you." Oh. Well, some things change, some things don't. Burden, that's spelled B-I-R-D-E-N. "You, because they certainly will be no burden for us. Okay, Horn family, we must continue to support the artist formerly known as Bob because this change will cost a..." Wait for it. "Because this change will cost a princely sum." Whew. New year, same Jeffrey. Thank you, Jeffrey, you little prancing prince, you. When I initially noticed the emails and phone calls from Rick, I couldn't help but think that the artist formerly known as Bob telling the story of the day John Lennon died and how the ticker wire went crazy with six bells ringing that evening down at... No, it wasn't in Atlanta, Joey. That was in Tuscumbia, Alabama, the little town with scum in the middle. Instantly, Robin raced to see if the world was coming to an end. For many that night, December 8th of 1980, it did, as the death of Lennon was too much. I mentioned the song by John Lennon, Number 9 Dream, which was from the album Walls and Bridges, but the song that I really loved from that album was Whatever Gets You Through the Night, because of the lyrics. Whatever gets you through the night, it's all right, it's all right. Do it wrong or do it right, it's all right, it's all right. The whole takeaway from the song, as I see it, was that you are allowed to be yourself and be who you are. Now, here's a weird thing, and there's... no way that Joey knew this. There is absolutely no way that Joey knew this. There's a possibility that some people knew this. Maybe Steve from Georgia, Stan, knew this. Maybe David in South Carolina, Stan, knew this. But the original opening music for this program was, you guessed it, Whatever Gets You Through the Night, by John Lennon. So, you know, how about that, Joey? And a cowbell, not for humor, not for comedy, but for some pretty creepy crystal ball action there. Anyway, later in the song, Lennon talks about enlightenment and maybe even death as he sings, "Whatever gets you to the light, whether it is out of the blue or whether it's out of sight, it's all right, it's all right." Then Lennon continues with some irony as the song finishes with, "Don't need a gun to blow your mind, oh no, oh no." And here's Jeffrey. Jeffrey explains the lyrics. "Yes, I interpret the last part of the song as Lennon saying, don't commit suicide over who you are or want to be, but sadly, 40% of trans people do at least attempt it once in their life." I think Jeffrey just translated that tune. However, Jeffrey does have a bone to pick with you, Robin. Oh, dear. "Yes, Robin, I was hurt that you didn't call me and tell me about your situation, considering I'm a male giraffe with no genitalia, and some would consider me to be a trans, whatever the hell that means. The only trans I know about is being supported by Joey, and that's wonderful." Transported by Joey. I get it? Transported, yes. "I could have told you all about the male life with no genitalia. Hell, in this situation, I just thought that would have been the first one to hear from you. However, I understand if you wanted to talk to Tara, Tracy, and Chris about the matter. I'm not hurt. Besides, I likely think your new name of Robin is very appropriate because you have been robbing me of a lot of cowbells lately." Oh, I think Giraffrey's a little mad about the cowbell situation. Well, says Joey, I think I'll cut this Joey's Journal short, no pun intended, because Giraffe and I are very tired as we drove through the night, departing Liz's place at 9:30 in the evening last night, just in time to arrive back in Ohio for work at 8:45 this morning. We actually had a difficult time departing because Charlie, Liz's wonderful big old fluffy puppy, literally sat down in front of my car in the driveway in an attempt to impede our path out to the road. Yeah, Jeffrey and I love Charlie, and we'll miss him. I promised him, though, that I would be back for MLK Day to help clean up all the signs in a couple of weeks. You know, being willing to clean up the signs is a big damn thing, because you put those signs out for all you're worth, and then a lot of people forget that they're there, and a very small handful of people wind up doing all the work. I will tell you about some of the morans I encountered in tomorrow's journal, but I want to finish by mentioning one man who is definitely not a moran on this Moran Monday, and that's Ben from Seattle. As many of you may remember me mentioning Ben, who is a recovering lawyer originally from Indonesia via L.A., now living in the city of Seattle. Ben is now a caregiver as COVID wiped out his legal labor assignments. One of his clients bought him a first-class ticket to Atlanta a couple of weeks ago so he could campaign for Ossoff and Warnock. Ben, bless his heart, came for a weekend, and yes, he Warnocked his ass off for the cause. Thanks again, Ben. Last night at about 12:45 Eastern, I got a text from Ben asking me how it was going in Georgia. I was very tired as I was trying to get through the mountains of northeastern Tennessee and southern Kentucky. Then all of a sudden, Giraffe's phone rang, and it was Ben. See, Robin, Ben could call Giraffe. How come you couldn't? You know, that little giraffe nominated you for a Tony Award for your award-winning performance as King Henry II in The Lion in Winter. I know. Unfortunately, they don't give it for community theater. Well, anyways, just like Lennon sang, whatever gets you through the night, Ben was right there full of enthusiasm and helped me get through the night in Kentucky. Thank you, Ben. You're special. Ben got us to Cincinnati, where Jeffrey and I stopped at one of our favorite rest areas just out of Cincy and took a two-hour nap before finishing the last 3 hours and arriving at work 15 minutes early this morning. This has been Joey's Journal for a couple of real morans, Leffler and Perfidu, on Monday the 4th of January, with Giraffe phoning for the 5th. Tomorrow is the big day. And that it is. Oh, that it is. And we've got a lot to get into in regard to that. Thank you, Lou, for the January 5th Georgia reminder. If you have to go and vote in person, you're going to have to go and vote in person tomorrow. And I'm sure people who are trying to vote in person in majority-minority districts will have to stand in line for probably something on the order of 14, 16, 18 hours because, well, voter suppression is alive and well. And let's remember that not only was Brian Kemp involved, but so too was Brad Raffensperger, who has apparently been elevated to hero status now for having merely said to Donald Trump that his numbers were wrong. But he was in on the rat-fucking that took place that kept Stacey Abrams from becoming governor of Georgia. So just kind of bear that in mind. Kyle notes, ha, 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 ha. It shocks me what comes out of her mouth sometimes because it reminds me of me talking about his baby sister. Honestly, what my father says somehow sounds smarter and more tethered to reality when you read it that way with that accent. Ooh, dear God, Kyle, that's frightening. You mean I redneck it up and I make him... Oh, my. Oh, my. And that's my pathetic George Takei impression. So thank you for the kind words, Joey and Giraffe, you too. Thank you so much. Where to begin? Well, let's see here. Oh, and... There's another challenge added to the table, so we're going to try to raise $301 tonight because Cecilia and Jeremy got us down that far. And so there's a $21 Go Bucks, as in Buckeyes, oh, and fuck Dabo Swinney challenge on the table this evening as a result of the margin of victory of Ohio State, who only played six games, putting a smackdown on Clemson. I didn't expect that. And yes, I watched. I did. I'm sorry. I can't help it. And my Mountaineers managed to even eke out a last-minute win over Army in the last football game of 2020. So at least it ended on an up note, I guess. Yeah. So there's 321 bucks worth of challenge money on the table now, or 301. And so if we can knock that out, it'll get January off to a really, really good start. And the sooner the better. Yep, 14 hours in line, says Randy. Radar, hang on to your diapies. Rugrats reference. And it may be a Rugrats reference, but it's also there's also a bit of truth to it. First time I ever heard about it was when I went to a protest in D.C. And they said, listen, once they arrest you, you're not going to see a bathroom for a long time. So try not to eat anything while you're protesting. And keep hydrated, but understand, you're going to be peeing in a diaper. And it was just practical advice. And frankly, it might not be terrible advice if you're planning on voting in Georgia, and you must if you haven't voted yet, and you're voting the right way, you better damned well be ready for it. Now, the white folks that show up to vote for David Debate Chicken Perfidu, the insider trader, and Kelly Offler Loeffler, Attila the Hun, the insider trader, they won't have to worry about things like depends because they won't stand in lines. They'll just be in and out and gone because it'll be real easy to vote Republican if you're in a Republican district. And that's kind of what I meant about Brad Raffensperger. Guy's not exactly a hero. He's sat there while early voting stations were shut down in minority-heavy districts in Georgia. So, yeah, please hold your applause. Billable Rick says, Robin, did Giraffe get his cowbell for today's Journal for Humor, not content? No, he got it for content. He got it for content. And I think that given the warm-heartedness of that giraffe and his pal, I think that covers the bases. I really do. So now, oh, that's very good. Stockton Larry in the chat room. I heard that Purdue is one sick chicken. I presume by now that everybody has heard the treason tapes. Or treason tape. The treason recording. We don't use tape anymore. Come on. The hour-long felony. And if one were a prosecutor, one would be hard-pressed to figure out, is this just one long felony, or is it a whole bunch of felonies all wrapped up together? It's kind of hard to tell. But I presume everybody's heard it by now. The best comment on it that I have yet seen is the comment that was tweeted by Dan Rather, who said, Donald Trump's election interference recording is like looking to the Nixon tapes and saying, hold my beer. It was funny. And bonus, it was true. So we, yeah. Hey, thank you, Kyle. Kyle just jumped in and met. Apparently Kyle hates Clemson too. Jumped in and met the challenge that Steve in New York put on. The $21 bucks, Go Bucks challenge, and and fuck Dabo Swinney. That's been met now. Thank you, Steve, and thank you, Kyle. And let's see if we can now take care of Bruce's memorial challenge. That'll be very helpful. So, what I was saying, I presume everybody has heard the audio by now. And Brad Raffensperger was on there, and Brad Raffensperger's lawyer, Ryan Germany, was on there. And the backstory to this is that one of the things we found out, especially over the course of the last couple of years, is that because of his reputation for being a pathological liar, and because anybody who has known him for any amount of time knows that he will lie about anything he talks to anyone about who does not have concrete proof to the contrary, people realize, Republicans realize, that the only way to protect yourself against him is to record him. We know it was that way with Mary Trump. It was that way with Melanoma's buddy. And you can make an argument, Billable Rick, Steve, Darlene, Lou. You can make an argument that for Ryan Germany, counsel to the Secretary of State of Georgia, not to have recorded Nitwit Nero would have been an act of legal malpractice, especially because Nitwit Nero was heard in that recording threatening Ryan Germany with criminal prosecution for not engaging in election fraud. So how about that? He had to record it. And he didn't have to tell Nitwit Nero that he was being recorded. And so we have something now that's causing a little bit of a stir. But alongside that, this morning, there came news of this op-ed letter that was signed by every living former Secretary of Defense, in which they warned about Trump trying to use the military to meddle in the outcome of an election. Well, okay, some of the maggots have blathered about martial law, and I think maybe even the phrase itself has emerged from Nitwit Nero's lips maybe a couple of months back. But here's the thing. 10 secretaries of defense that range all the way from Don Rumsfeld and Dick Cheney, bear in mind, to more sane and, you know, rational people, not known for hanging out and, you know, just playing canasta together, all came to the same conclusion that this shit has to be stopped. And they didn't mince a lot of words in the process. And that led me through the course of the day, because I have taught, I have learned the hard truth that over the past 4 years, and it's more of a reminder, paranoia is the irrational fear that people are out to get you. Rational fears that people are out to get you are not paranoia. And so it's not paranoid to wonder what those former secretaries of defense know, because all of them pretty much likely still have people inside the Pentagon who know a little bit about what's going on, and who quietly whisper to their former bosses. And their former bosses largely remain silent. And the fact that all 10 of them were willing to sign the same document, that they actually came to consensus, everything from hard right Project for a New American Century types to, you know, center right, maybe even centrist secretaries of defense, to my way of thinking that I have learned over these past 4 years, and then some, that says they know something. That says they know that something is up. The game, as Sherlock Holmes would say to Watson, is afoot. And it's kind of bolstered by another story that I ran across that said that people in Scotland are observing high levels of activity around the air base, the airport that the U.S. military uses in Scotland, that is nearest to Trump's shitty golf club there. Now that set the rumorosphere afire, wondering if Trump was going to try to take it on the lam, head for Scotland, and then divert to some other country in order to avoid prosecution. I don't know that I'm willing to go that far. But I will go so far as to say that it certainly indicates that something is up. It's the kind of activity at that in Scotland that one usually expects to see when the orangutan decides to go walk about. I don't know. But other weirdness has piled upon it since then. One of the questions that I asked yesterday was that how is it that Raffensperger was even on that call? Why did he agree to the call? And the two most immediate possibilities are that, one, he's still a maggot. I mean, the man did vote for Donald Trump, okay? And the other possibility is that, well, they were gathering evidence because the call itself was designated a settlement conference over continuing litigation and threats of litigation. Or again, the possibility that it was some sort of a sting. And then today we got our answer. Because Brad Raffensperger then went on to say, and to me, he's no hero. He's a vote suppressor. He's suppressing them even as we speak, as previously discussed. But he went on to say that over the past 2 months, COVID Caligula had begged for a phone call from him no less than 18 times. 18. I mean, Jesus, at that point, I think it rises to the level of stalking. But here we are. And like I said, we've all heard the recording. Along the way in the recording, Julius Geezer says, and of course, there's a Never Trump prosecutor in Atlanta, a Never Trumper U.S. attorney. That was the actual quote. He was apparently referring to the U.S. attorney for the Northern District of Georgia, Byung Pak. And according to reporting from Talking Points memo today, Byung Park had previously said that he would remain U.S. Attorney for the Northern District of Georgia until January 20th. And traditionally, and of course all the traditions are out the window, traditionally, a U.S. attorney kind of expects to be replaced by the incoming president. I remember, and I'm sure you do too, the purge that Turd Blossom, you know, Karl Rove engaged in upon his accession to the presidency. And in fact, U.S. Attorney Pack had said that he'd stick around till January 20th. Well, that's over, because today, U.S. Attorney for the Northern District of Georgia, Byung J. Pack, said, "I'm out of here, effective 5 minutes ago. I'm leaving, I'm taking my crap, and I'm not sticking around till any January the 20th. Oh, no, not me." And it came right after he was accused of being a never-Trumper U.S. attorney in Atlanta. He's been on the job since 2017. And on the way out the door, U.S. Attorney Pack noted that he was quitting early because of, quote, unforeseen circumstances, unquote. Well, are your spidey senses tingling? Because my spidey senses are tingling. There is something going on. You got 10 living United States former secretaries of defense who do something that former secretaries of defense have never done. And that is to call out the idea of using the military to affect the outcome of an American presidential election. And then you've got a U.S. attorney in Atlanta who has been true to his duty. I mean, I don't know enough about the man to know what kind of a prosecutor he is or was. But he was damned well a good Republican, good enough that he'd held a seat in the Georgia House of Representatives for 6 years. And whatever he was doing there made the nitwit Nero administration say, "That's our guy." And so you got to wonder about those unforeseen circumstances, because that's a significantly different phrase from the usual "spend more time with my family" that we get. And all the people who have formerly occupied positions such as Mr. Pax are more than a little bit curious about how this happened to play out. Now, and it's no secret or anything, but, you know, our pal Billable Rick is a former assistant U.S. attorney. And maybe he's got some input on this. I don't know. Charlie Pierce earlier today said that what's going down, and God, he can turn a phrase. He said that what's going down seems to be a cross between 7 days in May and duck soup. Hooray for Captain Spaulding. And that's about the size of it. So I don't know. It is being said by sources inside the White House, as reported by the Associated Press, that after the one-hour phone call in which he harangued Brad Raffensperger, and Raffensperger refused to help him perpetrate a coup, that he was so angry, venereal Vespasian was, that he was enraged, he was furious, and he stomped around the White House. Haben Sie gehört, hatten geworden sein.
You know what? Fuck him. Just fuck him. You know, I was going to go down there and try to help them campaign. But fuck him. I'm not going now. We had a rally all set up. But I'm not going.
But then, the way it's reported, aides convinced him to go to the rally after all so that he could use it as a late Festivus airing of grievances. So he could have a
voter fraud, mail-in ballots, they're shredding ballots in Fulton County.
And so apparently he's gone or going. Because I guess that was today, or will be later this evening. Anybody want to check on the timing of that? I'm open to it. And I guess there are a few rational people around, because the AP also noted that other Republicans are a little less than sanguine about the positive effects of having Trump go down and throw a tantrum in front of his faithful. Republicans, though, were wary as to whether Trump would focus only on himself and potentially depress turnout by undermining faith in the runoff elections and not promoting the two GOP candidates. Watch this space. That was interesting. My spare tank of propane slid from off its perch. But let's see what happens. Because, among other things, the Fulton County, Georgia district attorney said she will pursue charges if enough evidence comes to warrant them. And that leads to the larger question of whether or not the things that he is doing right now are actually criminal acts, because no sooner did the tape come out than, one, the maggots started, how dare they record our president? That ain't no fair. Well, Georgia is apparently a single consent state, which means that you can record someone without telling them, as long as you, the recorder, consent. Now, what's equally curious is the fact that you know damned good and well that the White House was recording this too, and that it was going to go into that file that can't be accessed by anybody except maybe God, if God knows the password. Got a note from Todd in South Carolina, Stan. Congratulations on your new reality. Does this mean if you're attracted to overweight people within that specific community that you like trans fats? Oh, dear God. No judgment involved. Freedom is bliss. Yes. But no, Todd asks in all seriousness, trans fats, really? Are you saying there's a possibility that 45 has made contact with sycophants in the military to ensure some type of outcome or power move, martial law? I don't know what I'm saying, Todd. I don't necessarily know what I'm saying. No. But there are some things that you can't avoid noticing, like the recent hollowing out of longtime Pentagon staff with real expertise. and their replacement by loyal maggots. I'm not trying to scare anybody. But this is a... Oh, what does it say at the beginning of the Dune movie? Princess Irulan says, "Know this, a birth is a delicate time." Yeah. Well, I guess the run-ups to coups are delicate times, too. And we know, I mean, there are things we know, Todd. Not suspect nor surmise, but we know that the United States military is infiltrated to degrees that I don't think we want to admit, but have to acknowledge, are shocking. Infiltrated by 3%ers and oath keepers, various and sundry Klansmen, skinheads, neo-Nazis, Proud Boys, Boogaloo Boys, and what have you. Brown shirt outfits like the Proud Boys aren't even trying to hide it. We've discussed already that they are saying that on January 6th and on January 20th, they will be in the streets in D.C. and they won't be in their Proud Boy drag. In fact, they plan to wear all black so that whatever deviltry they get up to, they will holler, "Well, that was the Antifa." And the other thing that's more than a little bit creepy is the idea that, well, remember, one of the first things we learned about him as he came into the presidency was that Geezer Disgustus asked the military,
"What's the point in having these nuclear weapons if we can't use them?"
So would he order an attack on, say, I don't know, Iran? I think this is... Well, what did I say? What have I been saying for years now? No matter how weird yesterday was, today has been weirder still. And no matter how weird today has been, tomorrow is going to be even weirder yet. Well, we're getting to that part of the program where weirdness is, to use that Bible-y language, pressed down and shaken together. And we're already in the middle of a pandemic. So it really is kind of a, you know, hold on to your seats and get that white knuckle death grip going. Because this could get a lot of bad. I hope it doesn't. I would like for this country to be something resembling normal. But we're all well familiar by now with the fact that normal is nothing more than a setting on a dryer. Oh, thank you. Thank you, Sparky. The Nitwit Nero rally begins at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We might... I don't even know who's going to carry it. I'd like to think that no one will, but somebody will. The Maggot Network, if nothing else. I don't know about... I don't know about C-SPAN. But maybe we should check that out. It's going to be creepy as fuck. It just is. Let's check the mailbag again. I miss one program and then all the shit hits the fan. Well, my beloved community, it never ceases to amaze me the stupidity of Republicans, out of which my little brother is one. He asked on Facebook if anybody could point him to a church. He's looking for a new place of worship. I told him, why ask me? As long as they're not handling snakes, he should be okay. And then Republicans eating their young. Yes, that's right. Donald Trump can't help but ask them to beg for 12,000 votes. It won't do him any good, and he's still the orange piece of shit. Your buddy Dave and the blind, P.S. I'm going to have to listen to the whole program Thursday just to catch up. Thanks a lot, guys. Lou noting, as to the former Secretaries of Defense, martial law under consideration. I know, well, you have to guess. You have to sit there and try to tea leaf read and read between lines and parse things. And I've been doing that all day long, and it doesn't parse well. Somebody is apparently talking about some sort of military intervention. And that is nothing, if not terrifying. National emergency. Here's another one for you, just to throw another log on the conspiracy fire. Remember what, a couple of weekends back, we had the complaint from the Biden transition team saying that they were being frozen out of the Pentagon in their efforts to have an orderly transition of power? And the maggot said, no, 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 it's just a pause. We're just pausing it. We'll be back to it, you know, sometime before the 20th, maybe, whatever. Do you think maybe that freeze-out might have had something to do with the conspiracy that's taking place in the Pentagon, perhaps even as we speak? We're at a place, and this is when rat, you know, a cornered rat is the most dangerous of rats. And we are at a place where the walls have closed in to where if he farts, he'll probably get a concussion from the extent to which it'll drive his head into the forward wall. Is that why that was? Is it just it's entirely possible it was just maggot assholery. But I don't think just defaulting to that is necessarily sane policy or best practices when you're talking about Donald J. Trump, and the J stands for treason. And then we get to the generals themselves. Now, way back at the academy at some point in time, maybe for about 15 minutes, right after a 10 mile hike, and shortly in 15 minutes before chow, future officers of the United States military are taught a little bit about mutiny. And they are taught that it is the law of the United States of America that no commissioned officer is obliged to obey an illegal order. Now, along the way, they also explain that, by God, if you're going to play that card, you better know you're playing it right. You better know that ain't nobody else got any spades in their hand when you throw that one down. Because if you're wrong, you're ruined. And so, since 1945-ish, the smart money has been to just snap a salute and follow the order. Because this military will cut you considerable slack on the I was only following orders defense. It didn't work worth a damn at Nuremberg, But Nuremberg wasn't the U.S. military or the United States. Is this making any sense? So what happens if he says,
"Hey, General, Admiral, I want to nuke Iran."
Do they snap a salute? Or do they say, "Sir, that's an illegal order," and refuse to obey it? And if they refuse to obey it, are they relieved of command? And does the person who is next in the chain of command step in and they obey the order? What we're looking at here is the military version of the Saturday Night Massacre. Remember, the Attorney General of the United States wouldn't fire Archibald Cox, and the Deputy Attorney General wouldn't, and Nixon went all the way down the list until he got to the bottom, scraped the bottom of the pickle barrel, and pulled up Robert Bork, who said, "No morals whatsoever, no scruples at all, of ethics I have none, and Mr. Nixon, I will happily do your bidding." So in a scenario like that, the one general or admiral who says, "No, sir," does not stop the process. And I find that absolutely terrifying. Somebody's going to snap that salute and press that button. And that does. I'm not kidding. That gives me the chills. Yeah, that's what I was talking about. Sparky just sent the link along. There's been a lot of hustle and bustle around that airport near Trump's shitty property in Scotland. The Daily Mail, take it for what it's worth, asking, Sparky sent it along, "Is Trump going to fly to his Scottish golf course to avoid inauguration? Prestwick Airport has been told to expect a U.S. aircraft with a special call sign on January 19th, but will he be allowed to golf amid U.K.'s new national lockdown?" That's the question they're asking? Now, this comes in with alongside another piece of news, namely that a court in the U.K. today refused to extradite Julian fucking Assange to the United States. I have no crocodile tears to waste over Julian Assange. I'm a vocal and relentless supporter of journalistic freedom, but here's the fun part. Julian Assange is not and never has been a journalist. I'm more of a journalist than Julian Assange. But a court in UK said, no, we're not going to extradite Julian Assange to the United States because the United States cannot guarantee his health and safety in its custody. That's shameful enough as it is. But you also have to remember that the Obama administration had every opportunity in the world to pursue Julian Assange and chose not to. And they were the ones, in political terms, who got burned by Julian Assange. If anybody had a motive, they did. But Nitwit Nero went after him regardless of what the previous administration done. It was probably another sad and pathetic case of,
"Well, Obama wouldn't do it, but I did." Because
he doesn't get much more complicated than that. And so you've got the UK creating an example of a refusal to extradite on a legitimate charge. So maybe Nitwit Nero thinks that he could hole up in his ugly Scottish castle, maybe even renounce his American citizenship. And think that he could evade prosecution and extradition? Should places like New York and or, oh my God, maybe Georgia decide to indict him for alleged crimes before, during, and after his presidency? You, after a while, you know, your eyes begin to roll back in your head and you kind of little disoriented. I mean, I know what he'd say if he tried to go out and play golf in Scotland.
Yeah, but I had it. See, I had it. And I, some people have told me I'm immune forever.
Don't know who that special call sign might be. He's not going to go to Biden's inauguration. He's too weak an individual to be able to endure something like that. According to the Sunday Post, Prestwick Airport has been alerted to expect the arrival of a U.S. military Boeing 757 aircraft, the same one that's been used by Trump in the past. It will land at Prestwick on January 19th. And, of course, Scotland is about 6 hours ahead of Eastern Standard Time. So factor that in. Ben Birch expects them to divert in mid-flight and go on to Moscow. I said, no, 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 Ben. He's already got a property in Turkey. So why not just go down there? I'm sure Erdogan would happily refuse to extradite. Maybe. Because you have to remember that, there's about 1,000 years of history of promises being made and then promises being broken. I mean, the Byzantine relationship with the Turks and the Parthians is a history of tongues being pulled out and eyes being gouged out and people thrown in dungeons. And, you know, all the while the people who were getting that done to them were like, hey, I thought we were friends. So there you go. Going to the phones in a sec, but I want to check the mail real quick. from Dave number 11. Hey, Robin, who is this? Alexa? Alexa, play Charlie Doerr's hit song.
Pilot of the Airwaves.
Yeah. Kyle says, Robin, you're not helping with my sleep patterns here. Sorry. I mean, you buys the ticket, you takes the ride, Kyle. I guess, Kyle adds, sleep is overrated. Well, have that. Steve in New York says, yeah, here you go, 757 aircraft, Air Force Two. I know. They flew Air Force Two into Charleston, West Virginia, because we can't land 747s at Jaeger. Darlene in Connecticut noting, oh, the Julian Assange thing just annoys me. I don't believe for a second he'll commit suicide if brought to the U.S. Assange will do anything to stay out of this country. He'll feign suicidal intent. I'm even so jaded as to think he had children with his lawyer as another way to engender sympathy for his case and try to win his freedom. And I was utterly dismayed to hear none other than Hakeem Jeffries pull an Obama today and say we're not looking back but forward in regards to the Trump phone call. I told you to be prepared for that. It was qualified in that he stated forward to the inauguration or something to that effect, but I hope this isn't the goddamn ploy Democrats are going to play with us. Next it'll be we're not looking back but forward to getting the virus under control. Then it'll be something else. Sorry, but this cannot stand. It just can't, and I'm worried that Democrats don't have the guts to ensure Trump is prosecuted to the full extent. They will lose support if they go back on their own mantra, no one is above the law. I agree. On the other hand, Darlene, I would also suggest that what we're looking for here is a return to normal. Curiously, we still don't have an announcement of who the AG is going to be. Maybe people don't want the job. I don't know. But it will be, where federal charges are concerned, it will be the job of the Attorney General to determine what and if to take things to the grand jury. And we know that there's potentially already a brace of indictments waiting in the Southern District of New York for acts taken before he was president that will not be affected by a statute of limitations if they act promptly in the SDNY. And the Attorney General of the United States, nor the Democratic National Committee, nor Biden himself has any influence over Letitia James in New York or the Manhattan District Attorney. So I'm hoping we're not going to get any of that bullshit virtue signaling about looking forward and not back, but I suppose that's a possibility. And Julian Assange is a con artist. Plain and simple. At one point in time, I actually had a modicum of respect for him. But, you know, once you go hand in hand with huggable, lovable, cuddleable Vlad Putipoot, and you start doing the business of the IRA, the Internet Research Agency, and Fozzie Bear and Yogi Bear and all those other hacker outfits of Mother Russia, yeah, that pretty much put paid to all of that. So, yeah. Meanwhile, David in South Carolina, Stan, reminds us that, yes, Iran has resumed 20% enrichment at Fordow, which is the level that they were at prior to the previous agreement. And, of course, that works very nicely. And you can bet that Psycho Bibi over in Israel is on the blower to Trump saying, No, push the button, Donnie. We're right behind you here in Israel. We're your friend. And trying to get him to do what Israel won't. Even though they have recently been caught, you know, engaging in assassinations. You know, they're the ones who bumped off the Iranian nuclear scientist. Nobody's really making any questions about it. And, you know, since I became a non-smoker, and today is day 114, my sense of smell has gotten considerably better. And I was just sitting here in the studio, and I was like, something on fire? And it's something I haven't smelled in a long time. I didn't like it when I was a smoker. I like it even less that I'm a non-smoker. Ugh. Somebody's fired up the coal stove. Because that I'm smelling right now, and if this was smell-o-vision, you'd smell it too, but I wouldn't do that to you. That, by God, is coal smoke. And it is sweet, and it is sickly, and it is disgusting. But give me a sec here. I'm going to holler for Agnes to make sure that it is what I think it is. I just wanted to make sure that my nose is telling me, is telling her the same thing my nose is telling me. Because, God, that's awful. That's eye-wateringly bad. Yuck. Oof.
coal smoke is like a really, it's like a bad fart if a human being's been eating cat food. That's coal smoke. Smell it, dear?
Yeah, there's people burning stuff all the way around.
Well, some of what they're burning is coal. That's coal.
Well, I'm not so much worried about the coal now as I am the COVID. So, you know, there's that.
Hopefully fire destroys the COVID.
Exactly. So, you know, crank up the heat.
Yuck. That's disgusting.
I was being sarcastic. Yeah.
Anyway, we've crossed the hour boundary, and we've still got $280 of Bruce's Memorial Challenge to handle over the next hour and 50 minutes. It would be great if we could, please, so that we can start a new month and a new year without a new hole to fill in. Get it right, Kincaid. It's Cozy Bear and Guccifer 2.0, says Brother Deacon Asa. Also, Julian Assange is a freedom fighter. Wake up, sheeple! Oh, God, yes. Wake up, sheeple. Delightful. Let's go over and check in with Todd. Todd's been patient. Thank you, Todd.
Oh, Robin, nesting in the horn.
Yes, indeedy. Robin Red No Breasts.
Red No Breasts.
Yet. Why did you make me do that? But that's okay.
That caught me off guard. Not the breast part, but I don't know. The robin. I was just thinking about like a robin nesting in a hollow horn.
Yes.
You know, like, you know, a shafir, I guess. Yeah. And, you know, I figured we were close enough where I could make that joke.
It's fine. I'm the one that brought in the boob reference, so, you know, that's entirely on me.
Oh, man. Hey, let the flag
And,
fly.
You know, there's further irony. You know, there were people who despised me in the past and referred to me as Boob Kincaid. If only they knew.
Stop it.
Trying.
Well, you know what? We need to laugh because you're connecting some dots that are just really...
I've been freaking right the fuck out for about a couple of days now. I mean, you know, it was pretty intense Thursday through Saturday, but it was like, well, that, put that in the past because, you know, shit's about to hit the fan.
And the one name you didn't mention that you had to be thinking about is Michael Flynn.
You're right. His name did occur to me, just not in the program so far.
Right. That's what I mean. I mean, it's so much. It's like when you start thinking about this too much, I think you're onto something. This doesn't make sense. Now, because remember what? And remember, you know, I was thinking about this.
I mean, we're talking about 10 secretaries of defense that would come to blows over what to put on a goddamn pizza.
But they had no problem coalescing around this. And it's a small network of people. And anytime you're in that type of a niche, you know, there's only certain other people you can talk to about things. That's what you're intimating, right?
Yeah.
Right. That's just how it works. You can't, you know, it's just the way it's shot.
That's what
talk,
the Sunday afternoon Canasta game's for.
Yeah, right, right. I mean, it's not funny, but right, they said, right, hey, remember that time we did this? Right. So, but see, and Flint, you know, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to whine. I'm going to breathe. Now, look, I have been thinking about this for a while since we last talked. But since Trump doesn't want to just leave like he should do, he should have left. As soon as he knew he lost, he should have just vacated so they could clean the White House. And I'm not being funny, but let's just be honest. But remember, on his side, his camp, they couldn't wait to start, you know, inserting themselves. They were begging for what, you know, slang is back channel, but what that really means is, you know, unfettered communication between themselves and whoever, Russia, China, whoever. Remember that? They wanted that so early that it was so nascent. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, I do.
So that's Michael Flynn on the front end, and he had all our secrets. And now here on the back end, he's talking about insurrection and sedition. As soon as he got pardoned, he comes out with that shit. And matter of fact, I'm glad I brought it up now. I don't understand why he couldn't have been arrested again. He had just been imprisoned for similar acts. And as soon as he gets pardoned, he comes out and he inciting insurrection and sedition. Am I missing something here?
No, you're not. I mean, pardons are not blanket pardons. They are pardons for prior bad acts.
Okay. So, right, we have that. And he has connections. So, in the military, that's how Trump knows who's a sycophant and who isn't. And there's an energy, there's a fervor. Excuse me. The election was way too close. There are too many people aligned with this nonsense. I mean, it's not a fringe. It's really not. That's just what we see.
Right.
See, there are a lot of people who are supporting that under the surface. So there's that part to it. And they just don't get, you know, they're not interested in all the little intricacies and why. They don't even see that we've been weakened, and this is what Russia has wanted, you know, forever since we became, you know, adversaries. The weakening of NATO, you know, I don't have to go into the litany. All the listeners understand that. And everything being hollowed out. The State Department's hollowed out. You know, IRS is hollowed out. The Secretary of Education is a capitalist. You know, it's just too much. And then we have this insurrection nonsense. Julian Assange is a Russian asset.
Yeah. I mean, that's pretty
we know
clear.
That. Right. Just like Trump and yeah, okay. And I'm really not going to keep you because a million people probably won't talk to you tonight. There's so much that's going to happen. But, you know, I remember now, and it clicked with me because it was so odd. When Trump was doing his rallies around the country, when it got down to where it was going to be close, in certain states, like the pollsters, his people said, okay, you're behind in these states that we want. And it seems like Arizona was one. There's about five of them, I think. And he repeatedly said, if you don't vote for me, you'll never see me again.
Yep. And something else happened today. Another one of his stupid lawsuits got bounced.
Oh, he's
something finally happened that we have been waiting and waiting and waiting to have happen.
What?
It was filed by a group of maggots from Wisconsin, the Wisconsin Voters Alliance. Also, several Republican lawmakers were listed as parties, and it was so bad that the U.S. district judge dumped it before anybody even had to respond to it. Plaintiffs' aims in this election challenge are bold indeed. They ask this court to declare unconstitutional several decades-old federal statutes governing the appointment of electors and the counting of electoral votes for the President of the United States, to invalidate multiple state statutes regulating the certification of presidential votes, to ignore certain Supreme Court decisions, and the coup de grace, to enjoin the U.S. Congress from counting the electoral votes on January 6, 2021, and declaring Joseph R. Biden the next president. denied. But then this. He countersunk the nail. In addition to being filed on behalf of plaintiffs without standing, and at least as to the state defendants in the wrong court and with no effort to even serve their adversaries, the suit rests on a fundamental and obvious misreading of the Constitution. It would be risible were its target not so grave, the undermining of a democratic election for president of the United States. Damn, right? Damn.
That's it. That's it.
And as an aside, it's worth remembering that all of this shit is only happening because there is an electoral college.
Oh, we're back to that.
Sorry. But it's true. All of this is only because there's an electoral college, and it's bad enough that a nasty little maggot from Kentucky in the House, Thomas R. Massey, he's the guy who tried to go toe-to-toe with AOC and walked back having had his ass handed to him. He said he's telling Republicans, these, you know, this sedition caucus in the House now, he's saying, y'all might want to not do this, because when you attack like this, you're destroying the Electoral College. Interesting, huh?
Mm-hmm.
But back to the judge in the D.C. Circuit, or in the D.C. District Court, because this is...
Oh, bigger.
No, because... The judge did something that I've been waiting for a judge to do.
Because the district court, that's not a normal, I mean, it is circuit, but it's different.
No, it's not the circuit. This is the trial court level federal court for D.C.
Okay.
These are trial judges. Oh. These are judges who actually know how courts work and how trials work. But toward the end of it all, the judge wrote, and it's Judge Boasberg, B-O-A-S-B-E-R-G. Judge Boasberg wrote, courts are not instruments through which parties engage in such gamesmanship or symbolic political gestures. As a result, at the conclusion of this litigation, the court will determine whether to issue an order to show cause why this matter should not be referred to its Committee on Grievances for potential discipline of plaintiff's counsel.
That's what I've been waiting on. Now you're talking about people being reviewed for being disbarred. Okay. That's what that means, I think.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Good. Finally. Finally.
About damn time. And at the same time, one of those silk stocking highfalutin law firms that Republicans just love, well, they're having a bit of a shit hemorrhage, because one of theirs was on the call with Trump in that call with Raffensperger.
That doesn't look good for that firm. They've lost status. Mm.
Yeah. Newsweek reported that Cleta Mitchell, which is curiously the feminine of Cletus,
it sounds like an onion name, though, doesn't it? The first time I heard it, I was like, no.
Cleta Mitchell is one of the firm's partners, which means Cleta is at the top of the pyramid scheme that is every law firm. And the law firm spoke out and said, we're very concerned about that she was on the call. Because the next thing you know, she's gonna be in the same boat with, what's her name, Sidney Powell?
Yep.
You know, the Kraken lawyer.
Yep.
And this is a firm called Foley and Lardner LLP. Foley and Lardner LLP is not representing. I know it sounds like Jeffrey. Foley and Lardner LLP is not representing any party seeking to contest the results of the presidential election. In November, the firm made a policy decision not to take on any representation of any party in connection with matters related to the presidential election results. Our policy did allow our attorneys to participate in observing election recounts and similar actions on a voluntary basis in their individual capacity as private citizens, so long as they did not act as legal advisors. We are aware of and are concerned by Ms. Mitchell's participation in the January 2nd conference call and are working to understand her involvement more thoroughly. Jesus Christ, please don't disbar the whole fucking firm.
Oh, they just...
No, I added the Jesus Christ part.
Well, that was only there. You only did that because it probably
and happened. And Billable Rick points out she's a well-known D.C. attorney and lobbyist.
That's what I was saying. That's a K Street type. Yeah, so look. Wow. She got rebuked like that in public. You know what happened in private. And she's a partner? Man, look.
Bad day. Bad day for Cleta.
What? She had no hope with a name like that. She should change her name anyway. Is that plural for clitoris?
No. Damn you!
I'm just saying.
No, that's the... No. Cletus is the masculine singular, and Cleta is the feminine singular.
Okay, so it would be clitoris.
No, it's Cletus. Cleta, the Latin plural would be Cletai. Cletai.
Oh, Latin. Our way. Oh, man, I'll never forget. I had led at 8 o'clock in the motherfucking morning, man. I mean, and it was immersion. As soon as you walked through this threshold, this dude was serious. Like, it was led.
Golly, I est omnis de we sign partes trace, motherfuckers. Right? That?
Woo! I mean, that's not the way to start your day. I mean, you had either, but, you know, it finally clicked. I was like, okay, I can use this. I mean, I was a freshman. I really did not. But then I figured out, okay, this is going to help me, you know, in neuroscience because of the, you know, prefixes and suffixes.
Oh, Latin is never a bad call in trying to get a good liberal arts education.
Oh, boy.
Your prof walks in and says, "We wamus mea lesbia atque amamus, you bastards."
Oh man!
Yeah, because you know when you're in like ninth grade Latin and you see that name in that poem, you know, lesbia. Okay.
Right.
Yeah, lesbian. Yeah, because ninth graders, right? Lesbians.
It just means woman. It just means female.
No, that was her name, lesbia. That was her fake name. Catullus. Oh. Catullus was in love with a woman named, and she was quite the individual.
What story are you referring to?
Well, this is from a poem by Catullus, and it begins...
Oh, the poem by Catullus.
Yeah, "We wamus mea lesbia aque amemus," which means, "Let us live, my lesbia, also let us love." Mm. And lesbia, he was covering, he wasn't giving up her real name, so he gave her a fake name, Lesbia, and she was actually Claudia Pulcair. And she was said to be beautiful. And, of course, Pulcair means beautiful in Latin.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
That was a nice way of getting her a code.
Well, and we're going to get into a little appearance shaming. Cleta, says Steve in New York. Oh, she looks like her name. Uh-oh. Ah! Damn, and I thought I looked rough.
That's a fucked up scene. What a day. This is just, that was
Steve.
What a day this has been. What a rare mood I'm in. Why, it's almost like being in a coup.
Oh, don't bring that up again.
With all due apologies to Nat King Cole.
Singing in it's raining now. Yo, what would happen? This is totally off track, but how did the propane tank jump off the stand or it's whatever it's perched on?
Nah, I just had it. I had it sitting behind me, and I moved the wrong way in the creaky chair here, and it just kind of tumbled off into the floor and knocked over the box of Morton's kosher salt because I ripped through one of those brining that ham. Oh, but I tell you what, the brining of the ham is another story. I'd never done one before. I had no idea what I was into. Totally on terra infirma. Oh, by the way, we can't say that name anymore because, you know, that's a name of one of our family members, Steve from Georgistan, Brother Deacon Steve from, well, no, Brother Bishop Steve from Georgistan, I guess. I promoted him inadvertently the other day. C-L-E-T-U-S, I can't say it. Stop invoking that name. She keeps digging on my leg, LOL.
Well, right.
So don't say it. She thinks we're talking to her.
Oh.
But, yeah. So anyway, I did the thing I told about the brine and everything. I used a cup and a half or more of brown sugar and like 3 cups of kosher salt because it was a 25-pound fresh ham. Mm. And I made my brine and I put all my herbs and spices in.
And did it fit in the 5-gallon bucket?
It would not fit in the 5-gallon bucket. I had to use my Yeti knockoff.
Okay.
And so I didn't. The plan was to have it for New Year's. You know what it did New Year's? It rained. And I don't mean it was just a little. You can't. No. There was no way.
No, we had torrential rain. Yeah,
there was no way to get the fire going. So I had a window of opportunity on Saturday. And it was like,
that was some Lewis and Clark Pacific Northwest rain. That shit just.
Well, it's what my friends once told me was referred to as a Scots mist. In other words, a soaking downpour.
Yeah.
And so couldn't do it Friday, had a window of opportunity, dried up a little bit, got the charcoal going, got a good fire going, loaded on the hickory and got it down low and slow, you know, about 225 degrees, put it on. Closed it up, took some video, put it up on social media of that thing just sitting there chugging smoke in the dark. The acorns just chugging smoke.
That thick white smoke.
It was white hickory smoke, and it smelled a hell of a lot better than this fucking coal smoke does. I can tell you that.
Oh, yeah, don't get me started with that. I'm tired of them. You know what? No,
well, we didn't have much of it last year, but here it is. Yeah, that's a whole different thing. There it is. I don't think it's going to have the same hit potential, but anyway, I let it go too long. I did because it was a 25 pound ham. I didn't know how long to have it in there. And the one thing I can't stand to do is open a smoker when I've got it at temp, because then I'm going to be forever.
Did it smell like it was burning?
No. I mean,
you could have a lot of shrinkage with the brining because it's going to dissolve the fat. It's going to make that fat come off the ham.
Well, what it did was it made self-frying chicharrones, which were actually pretty damn good.
Okay.
But what I wound up with was a great big haunch of pulled pork, or so I thought, because it was clearly not ham.
Mm-hmm.
But then a miracle happened.
You said it was just so you thought. Okay.
A miracle happened. I pulled it all, you know, put the bones aside, and you know the waste on the outside I just put out for the stray animals.
Mm-hmm.
But that interior was exquisite, smoky and flavorful, and I let it sit for a day. I mean, it was good when it was just out, but I let it sit for a day, and then I went back and had it for dinner this evening, just before airtime.
Mm-hmm.
It was too salty, wasn't it?
No. It was ham.
No?
It didn't look like ham, but it tasted like ham. It tasted like barbecued ham.
Get out. Oh, that's good.
So it's not the failure I thought it was, and I think come Easter, I'm going to try it again. If I can get the folks up at Wiggling Pig to get them in again, I'm going to try it again.
Well, what was this? Did this have the bone in it?
It's got huge. I mean, it's a ham. I mean, the whole hock and everything. It's, yeah.
This is like the cartoon ham, you know, you see on Warner Brothers, you know, with them, you can see the ham bone. And.
Well, yeah, I mean, let's see here.
Let me, I should look. You probably have pictures. I have to.
No, I didn't put any after pictures up because, frankly, I was kind of embarrassed. Let's see.
So it came out. So now you can slice it, eat it the way you want.
Well, no, it's shredded now. It's pulled pork, but it's got a one. And I told my buddy Dr. John Roby, I said one of the things I'm going to do is I'm going to mince up some of it.
That's what I was about to say. I want to hash, make some mayonnaise and relish, and make a nice sandwich.
Goddamn right. And I'm going to throw. And I got some. I got some truly kick-ass organic. Unfiltered apple cider vinegar.
Oh. Mm.
And so hit it with that and the mayo. And then today I saw in the store a jar of minced jalapenos.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
And
see?
Those and some dill pickle cubes
thing.
and celery and onions. And I have a feeling it's going to be very, very good.
The hash never gets old. I mean, that hash sandwich on a nice soft roll, that's just a good lunch.
Yeah, and my own, you know, the temperature was right. I just left it too long. That's all there was to it.
That's okay. That was your first outing on that, right?
Yeah, I'd never. This was entirely an invented process.
Oh, well, you're ahead of the game then. Your second time. Come on, second time? Yeah, well. That's a lot. That's nice.
Subject line singing, Brother Deacon Asa says, oh, dear Robin, for the love of God, please stop singing. Your singing's no better as a woman. I shouldn't expect. but back to Michael Flynn. Darlene in Connecticut says, I'm convinced Flynn is insane. He got his get-out-of-jail-free card, and then guess what he did? He doubled down. And although Manafort... Although Manafort was always jockeying for a pardon, I'm surprised Trump pardoned him as Manafort was money laundering through Trump's campaign. He pushed for establishing a PAC, which Trump did not want. Manafort still convinced Trump to establish the PAC, but on the sly, through two other individuals, money was being rerouted through the PAC for eventual kickback payments to Manafort. So the idea that Manafort worked for the Trump campaign free of charge is, well, untrue. So, you know, we've got that going on. And Darlene adds, it was discovered by the Russia investigation via their tracking this mysterious $150,000 payment floating around the campaign coffers. This is why Manafort started back-channeling like a double agent through that defendant's cooperation agreement with Trump's lawyers and began lying in violation of the plea agreement with the Mueller prosecutors. He didn't want Trump to find out about the kickbacks. In other words, that he was robbing Trump the Trump campaign too. So by pardoning him, I'm guessing that Trump expects Manafort will owe him. And Manafort is so damn sleazy and has such expensive taste that there's no way he won't get back into the money laundering game again. He can't help himself, although I do think there may be state crimes coming his way soon.
I agree with Darlene. And I just want to add to what you said about, but mainly focus on Manafort. But yeah, Michael Flynn, yeah, yes, he doubled down. My God, you just got arrested for a jewel theft. And here you are at the Four Seasons Hotel where the rich and famous stay, and you just robbed somebody's room. You say, I didn't do it. You know, he engaged in that, and he has a.
This diamond tennis bracelet. No, the guy coming out of the alley gave it to me. He said he was getting rid of it because they didn't like it anymore. No, I didn't. No, seriously, I didn't steal that bracelet.
See, and it seems to me with this whole fiasco of an administration, there's a whole lot of pattern and practice of illegality. And Trump has had it, is having it, you know, present tense, past tense, future tense. Pattern and practice. Isn't that a legal term, pattern and practice?
Oh, yes, it so is.
Yeah, I mean, what the fuck? Just a phone call, pattern and practice. But I want to go back to Manafort because I agree and disagree with Darlene in a way. Yes. But see, Manafort, we got to remember, it's amazing he's still alive. See, he's the bag man. He was the conduit before Trump. He knows where all the bodies are buried. He knows everything. See, he's the money man. He is the guy you talk to. Say, look, we'll pay this guy off. I don't know anything about it. Take care of that. You know,
yeah, you don't even say pay this guy off. You say, hey, take care of that.
Take care of that.
At least that's the way Michael Cohen describes things.
Right. Well, that's the way it works. You have to have insulation. I mean, you don't have to be a monster to understand that. I mean, that's the way it works. And that's been that's what he's been. I mean, he did that. That's why his daughter didn't like him, because he was so sleazy. You know, he would do business with anybody. And once you're in that deep, you know, people have things on you. So that's why they can't touch him. He's talking. There's a whole lot of shit going on. That's what I'm saying. You tapped into something. There's a whole lot. This is a lot deeper. A lot deeper than we know about. Because remember, all these congressmen have been compromised. And I know we're talking about food, and it's beautiful. Man, this is like, I'm excited for you. Would you check it out? Honest to God. But, you know, we got to focus on this Russia hacking thing. And I'm just saying what I'm about to say, I know for a fact. Now, there's been hacking all over the country in different types of municipalities. You know, medium size, small size, where they will take over the whole city's computer system. They won't be able to do payroll. They won't be able to do a whole lot.
Oh, I got something for you, because Pam in the Great Northwest says that the resignation of U.S. Attorney Pack in Atlanta. She says it brings to mind the Nance rule. Coincidence takes a lot of planning. What if Thug 45 forced him out so he could get a puppet who will arrest the Secretary of State, Governor, or both? Because that's the other part of it. He did threaten all concerned with criminal charges, and then went so far as to call out Pack by name, saying there's a never Trumper U.S. attorney in Atlanta.
You're as guilty as they are. That's what you mean, right?
Yeah.
See, this is getting dirty and ugly. This, right. And that's what took them so long when that tape first came out. They said, well, we're getting the rest of it up. They were trying to erase Pack's name. They had to get somebody's name out, you know, so people didn't hear it. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So this is that iceberg shit. We're just seeing the tip. But, you know, once again, this is exactly why you cannot have this type of individual being a person. And this is exactly why, going back to what you started with the Electoral College, part of their function. I mean, in for a penny, in for a pound, right?
Yeah.
You can't pick and choose what the Electoral College can do. So you're going to accept the whole tenet and all of it encompasses, or you're not. And once again, human resources. They could have said, they knew, number one, they knew he was a sociopath. They knew he wasn't an admirable. I mean, honestly, he has no redeeming qualities that I've seen. You know, I've been watching this guy for a very long time. He just doesn't. He's not, you know, he's not a decent human being. And now we had all this. He wasn't fit to begin with. And this is what we get. This is why we had a duty to warn. And now we have to worry. We've been in constant constitutional crisis. You know, what is he going to do now?
Well, you know, for the longest time, that was my pinned tweet over on Twitter, that the United States entered a constitutional crisis on January the 20th, 2017, and it has not let up.
It hasn't.
And in point of fact,
he has forced
our buddy Matt in San Francisco just distilled it to its essence, saying, subject line, unpredictable. There are so many insane players in positions of authority. I've stopped trying to game out where this country will end up. These people are capable of anything and have demonstrated they are willing to do much of it out in the open. It's frightening to think that what they're doing in the shadows. I'm more concerned about what comes after these crazy people exit stage left. The next group will be much smarter. I really hope as a country we could, at least once, hold these criminals to account. I'm not holding my breath, but hoping is still free. And I saw a friend of mine on Twitter earlier today, Joshua Holland, who writes for The Nation. And he said that, you know, that he is despairing from the impunity of it all. And what I responded was that is how they want you to feel. You're mm-hmm. supposed to look at this criminality and say, and nothing's going to be done about it. And so we're screwed. And my response is, at the very least, we can scream from the rooftops that we're not okay with this. We are not okay with this. And that we know damned well what's going on. Matt's absolutely correct in that it's hard to predict the actions of the criminally insane.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean like, you know, a serial killer who, you know, will give himself away. No, the person that you just don't know, you know, one day he's putting bricks through windows, and the next day he's, you know, burning down a church, and 2 days after that he's shooting at children. There's no pattern. Talking about pattern and practice,
right.
There's no pattern. And the only thing I can see is that relative to a pattern, the only commonality is that it all has to do with the acquisition of wealth, because that's what this thing has been all along. And you know, again, watching people, it was kind of a surprise because Tom Cotton, that maggot freak from Arkansas, of all the people you would have expected to jump on the sedition caucus, well, him. But guess who thinks he'd like to be president in 2024?
Exactly.
So he's not part of the sedition caucus, and the sedition caucus, meanwhile, with young Josh Hawley, for instance, is thinking. Because, see, everybody, look, Donald Trump is 75 years old, is a walking mass of comorbidities. And while people have said, you know, he's going to run again in 2000, no, he's not. He may not even be with us anymore in 2024. Okay?
Once they stop, once he doesn't have access to all those good drugs, he's going to fall apart.
And so, yeah, once he doesn't have the White House staff getting the dosage right every day, it's going to be a whole lot of difference.
Yeah, he probably had access. He has money, right?
But the thing is, he's, you know, the realization among the sedition caucus is that the maggots are going to be there for the picking, and that whoever comes, whoever comes out on top in that hell among the yearlings scenario has an inside track to 2024 for about 30% of the American electorate.
Therein lies our problem.
And so you've got Tom Cotton, who thinks, and Ben Sasse's out there too. And don't forget Bishop Willard Romney. He's older, but still. And apparently he scares some of the maggots, because a cat named Terry Harper, who is a member of the Texas State Republican Committee, tweeted, because he's a maggot and because Mitt Romney is not down with the coup. This Terry Harper dude tweeted, Romney should be introduced to our friend, Mr. Guillotine. Now, of course, when he got caught, he said, well, I didn't mean nothing by that. That's just a metaphor. When you know that, you know, Terry Harper probably couldn't spell metaphor if you spotted in the M, the E, the T, the A, the P, the H, and the O, and, you know, hoped for the R. That's just a metaphor, meaning that people should vote him out. Well, he's in Texas and Romney's in Utah. Metaphor, my left hind foot.
That's not in his lexicon, sorry.
But that's where they are. I mean, how are these people any better than the fucking Taliban?
Well, they're not, and this is the problem. And I'm glad you brought up, you know, this is a real thing. Sedition is a crime, and it's caustic to this particular country, because we kind of run an honor system in a lot of ways, and the way our Constitution is written, it's really not winner take all. I've been studying this. I get to do this at work, and it seems to me. This is my opinion, my interpretation, just me. But it's not it's winner take all, but you know, minority with deference. That's why we have all these checks and balances. The minority's voice does get heard. This is why when people say we can't do away with electoral college, that's what you have a fucking senator for. That's your voice. You know, that's. Otherwise, you little tiny states wouldn't have any. You wouldn't have shit. So shut up.
Right.
You know, stop. Yeah.
And so.
Not you, bro.
No, I mean, the battle is already on, whether we bother to see it or not. They are fighting for his. They're not fighting for his voters in terms of trying to accomplish anything politically. They are fighting for possession of his electorate. He doesn't. Trump doesn't have the consciousness to recognize what's going on. But what's going on is that they are literally fighting over his corpse. Because he is politically dead now and may not make it to 2024. I mean, does that seem implausible?
No, that's absolutely the way I see it. I mean, these people are primed, they're ready, and they just need, I mean, they may not, in other words, let's just call them the rabble. The rabble, they know what they want. They're riled up. They want Trump to be in. They're going to do their thing. There's going to be a little violence in D.C. It could be worse. We don't know. It could be a lot worse. We just don't know. But. Once again, back to the.
Let me share something with you, because this is sort of picking up where Matt in San Francisco left off. Don, mm-hmm. up in Prince George, B.C., along the way, suggesting we need to make some changes to the web page, and yes, we do. And yes, it is Robyn. But says, also, is all this confusion with Drumpf changing the daughter's chances for politics in the future? The cons have had high hopes for her and that repulsive oldest son. They may become that toxic. Or it's possible that the toxic oldest son and the toxic daughter may just wind up getting their asses indicted anyway. Because there's no looking forward. There's no looking forward and not back with those two assholes. But then... And this is cowbell worthy. I'm always up for a Mark Twain quote, and Don sends this one along. And this goes right to the heart of what Matt was talking about. It's no wonder that truth is stranger than fiction. Fiction has to make sense. Ding. That, precisely. And Darlene in Connecticut.
Wow, that's kind of profound. Wait, Matt, that's who
that was that? Don. That was Don. Yeah.
Don, that's profound. Yes.
And Darlene asks, what am I missing? In Ray Manafort and Todd's take on this. Sorry, but I'm pushing back. Now that Manafort has been pardoned, can't the feds force him to testify before a grand jury? He has immunity now. So if Manafort knows where all the dead bodies are, then sounds like the ball's in Manafort's court. He can be compelled to, he is federally pardoned. He can be compelled to testify in a federal court. But he still has liabilities in, at least potentially, in state court. So on the one hand, yes. On the other hand, no.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. I'm guessing Letitia James might actually be taking a look at some of his skullduggery. And,
it's easy to be killed in custody. Ask Epstein.
You know there were people putting Jeffrey Epstein ornaments on their Christmas tree, don't you? And when they did, they would take a picture and they'd caption it, "This Jeffrey Epstein ornament didn't hang itself." I know.
It's morbid humor. I don't have any sympathy
for it. Yeah, how do you not? And Steve notes, Steve in New York, oh, dear Todd, the minority is the only voice that gets heard. 1.4 million turtleites, boy reigns. The ultimate minority. We are being ruled by the votes of 1.4 million alleged Americans.
Well, that's because it's surgically precision engineered gerrymandering. But not only, but it's a lot of
not. No. Not in the Senate race. Not in the Senate race. It isn't.
Okay.
Senate races are statewide and not district based.
It is true, isn't it?
Yeah. So
it's very, you know, yeah. Well, right. You know, thank you. Mm. Well, you know, that is true. But you know, we I could back to what you were saying about this. This whole group of Americans, they're fodder. They're waiting to be to pick this up. They're going to pick up on that momentum, and it's not going away. And they're being fooled into thinking that something can happen, and the only way it can happen is by force. But then we have these other factors that you brought up. You know, this could be really ugly. I mean, the past history doesn't look good. I mean, we had pipe bombers, right? The guy in the white van. We had the Proud Boys.
Oh, and that's breaking news. The head of the Proud Boys has been arrested in D.C. because he's a what day is this, Todd?
In terms of what day of the week?
What is this? This is Moran Monday, right?
Correct.
So in anticipation of standing up for Donald Trump and freedom, the head of the Proud Boys, Enrique Tarrio, headed back to D.C. for the big kerfuffle on the 6th, and the Metro D.C. police served him with a warrant for stealing and then destroying a Black Lives Matter banner taken from a historic black church last month.
Good.
And they weren't hanging around. They stopped. I mean, they weren't going to wait. They stopped a vehicle. This from the Washington Post. They stopped a vehicle Tarrio had been in shortly after it entered the district. And they believed Tarrio was coming into the district from the airport. One misdemeanor count of destruction of property in connection with the December 12th burning of a banner stolen from Asbury United Methodist Church. I'm still trying to figure out why. Does D.C. not have hate crime legislation? Maybe not.
Don't know. D.C. is a strange place.
Authorities had described the burning of the banner as a potential hate crime. Sternbeck said it would be up to prosecutors with the U.S. Attorney's Office in the district to determine whether to file hate charges, which could increase the penalty.
Oh, that's a good question, because it's like you should, that's the one place in the country you should be able to really, like, express your freedom of speech. I believe in you should be able to burn a flag. However, what is your intent?
Well, but if you're going to burn a flag, you don't get to steal the flag you're going to burn.
Well, that's the other part of it. Exactly. So that shows malice. So that shows, you know, ill content. Right. It means you have, you know.
Yeah, because he said he'd plead guilty to the destruction of property, but he won't plead to a hate crime because he was doing it because Black Lives Matter has been terrorizing America for months.
See, so this tension is here. It, back to how you started. You know, when you just mention all these data points, you know, like the Pentagon closing, you know, shutting shop and not communicating. You know, what are they up to? What's going on? Are they trying to settle? I could see, I don't know, I had to think about it a little bit, but they want to settle that within house. You know, they don't want to, you know what I mean? That's why they shut the doors, because there's turmoil. Flynn was there. Flynn isn't the only one. He has people that align with him. He's not out there by himself. Can't be. People don't work like that.
Right.
That's incongruent with human behavior.
Sure it is. Sure it is.
So, you know, this is a fucking movie, man. This is crazy.
Just plain nuts.
Okay, yeah. Well, you know what? Thank you for entertaining everyone. Not entertaining. You're not entertaining. Thanks for taking my call. And
oh, man, thanks for making it.
I don't know, man. We got to keep. I don't know what we can do now. This is just. Hopefully, our institutions will hold. And in the midst of a pandemic, that's what I'm concerned about. We're not doing what we're supposed to do. And in the South, people are getting more lax. They're getting less compliant. Now, this is when we need to be more compliant, because this disease now is more transmissible, which means it can reach more people.
Yes, which reminds me of something. We need to put that to bed real quick. The idea that that somehow virulence is not as bad as fatality. I saw an article on that this week, and Jesus Christ, I mean. You got 43 infections at a California hospital because of a well-meaning individual who came through the wards wearing an inflatable Christmas tree outfit that had an air pump on it that kept the Christmas tree inflated. And it grabbed the air and shot it all over the hospital. And now you got 43 people sick.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I wish I was kidding.
Whose idea was that? Why didn't somebody stop them at the door and say, you know, no.
Wait a minute. Whose idea was that? But anyway, no, I found it. I found an article at The Atlantic.
Mm.
And I'm trying to find it now. And it explained that virulence is actually worse than fatality numbers.
It is. With this particular virus, it is. Remember, we're dealing with a novel virus. That's why, like, some time ago when I said the Wild West, you know, it's just kind of slang for meaning that the sky's the limit. And see, viruses only have one objective, is to replicate. They're going to figure out how to replicate. That's what they do. They're very good at it.
So writing over at the Atlantic, yeah. Zeynep Terfecci points out that, you know, the scientists are saying, well, it probably won't. The new variant won't reduce the efficacy of the vaccine.
Probably. Okay.
Yeah. And it's not a more severe disease. okay? And writes, all good and no cause for alarm, right? Wrong.
Wrong.
Because higher transmissibility subjects us to a more contagious virus spreading with exponential growth, whereas the risk from increased severity would have increased in a linear manner, affecting only those infected. So if it becomes more deadly, then it's just deadly to those who get it. But because it is more virulent, it means more people can get it, and therefore you get some really, really creepy data. And so let me just share this.
No, exactly.
To understand the difference between exponential and linear risks, consider an example put forth by Adam Kucharski, a professor at the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine, who focuses on mathematical analyses of infectious disease outbreaks. I mean, really pay attention to this. Kucharski compares a 50% increase in virus lethality to a 50% increase in virus transmissibility. Take a virus reproduction rate of about 1.1, which is low for a whole lot of America. Take a virus reproduction rate of about 1.1 and an infection fatality risk of 0.8% and imagine 10,000 active infections. A plausible scenario for many European cities, as Kucharski notes. As things stand with that, you know, reproduction rate 1.1, infection fatality risk 0.8, with those numbers, you'd expect to see 129 deaths in a month. If the fatality rate increased by 50%, then there would be 193 deaths instead of 129. By contrast, however, a 50% increase in transmissibility would lead to a whopping 978 deaths in just 1 month.
Right, because one person can infect more people. It's more,
right.
And that means there's more fatality. It's just statistics. It's just, come on. So that's, you know, they're trying not to scare people who don't understand biology. Because if you understand biology, you should be fucking frightened.
Well, at the same time, however, and this was a story from earlier today, it's one of those, you know, why, where are we going and why are we in this handbasket kind of moments. from the BBC and Colchester Hospital.
Colchester, gotta love that name.
So the hospital is already at capacity. But they have some outpatient areas that have empty hallways. And so a bunch of mask hole COVIDiots invaded the hospital and started running down the halls or walking down the halls, videoing the empty hallways as proof that the coronavirus is a hoax, Todd. And hospital security had to, quote, remove people who were taking photographs of empty corridors and then posting them on social media saying the hospital is not in crisis. When you've got that sort of social media pressure and those people denying the reality of COVID, it really concerns us. Words fail me. Why would people do that when we all know someone has died from COVID? Of course, there are empty corridors at the weekend in outpatients because that's the right thing to do. We're facing the biggest health challenge we've ever seen, and we're still seeing people flouting the social distancing rules. So they had to come in and throw the stupid fuckers out, who in turn were becoming super spreaders themselves.
Oh, God.
And, of course, over the weekend, you got Nitwit Nero again, tweeting out that Fauci is lying about the numbers. And the CDC is lying about the numbers. And,
you know, they blame everything on COVID now. If you die of gangrene of the toe, they blame it on the COVID. So unfair to Trump.
Well, you know what? I'm really upset with my fellow human beings. People need to stop with this nonsense about how you feel about shit. Because at the end of the day, feelings are okay. Keep it to yourself. Because people don't give a fuck how you feel about shit in your work life. That's one of the problems with Trump. You know, that's why I've always called him a walking cauldron of pathologies. It's not just that he's a sociopath. It's that his psychosocial development has been severely impeded because if you notice in his during his work, he always talks about who he likes and who likes him.
Right.
Nobody gives a fuck who you like. You do your goddamn job. People see he's stuck in some instances in pre-adolescence. At some point, you're supposed to figure out everyone's not your friend. People are associates. And you see where I'm going with this. It's just, anyway, that's my evidence of what I said about his psychosocial development.
Yeah.
But, this is just unacceptable bull. And we have a whole lot of just people who think, they're going about what they believe and what they feel. And just because you believe in God or whoever, and it's God's will, wear the damn mask. Because I'm telling you right now, this is going to happen. We could, either both or one of the other, we're going to lose about a third of our population of the planet over this.
I hope not.
Because, well, I'm just saying it looks this way. I mean, the factors are there. This is a novel virus. Remember, every time it infects someone, it changes a little bit, and it takes on the genes of the host. That's you. That's me. Everybody. And it hasn't figured out yet. What frightens me, and I said it before, and everyone knows this, and when you think about it, if it can affect your cognitive functions and your physical functions, that means it can almost do anything to your body that it wants to. It just has to figure out where it replicates the best. This could be the new polio. This could be a lot of things. We don't know yet because it could mutate to be less.
It's gonna have to if it wants to survive.
Right.
That's even troublesome language regarding something like a virus which has no conscience. But biology is biology and evolution is evolution.
Exactly.
By the way, slightly off topic. But Joe Biden, was in Georgia today, and he put it to Georgia voters on the skinny. If you send John and the Reverend to Washington, those $2,000 checks will go out the door, restoring hope and decency and honor for so many people who are struggling right now. And if you send Senators Perdue and Loeffler back to Washington, those checks will never get there. Plain and simple. Now, he could have added that, you have the power to stop Mitch McConnell's rule of this nation. But I don't think he wants to talk about that because, you don't want to admit that.
Right. He was delicate. I saw that. And I was proud of him. That's not the right word. I liked what he had to say. I liked the way he said it. He caught himself. I think he slipped up one time, and that's okay. He talked about my career. But, he said, you have the power in your hands. Vote, vote, vote.
Yeah. Exactly.
One more day. One more. And see, I thought that was very motivational. One more day. See, that's hope. That you can see light at the end of the tunnel. Show up. Do what you have to do. Make sure your vote gets in. Because a lot of, I'm kind of. That is the amount of early voting. But last time I read it was it 3 million?
Yeah, Georgia is up to 3 million.
That's a hell of a that's what it's supposed to be.
I hate to break this to you, but Brad Raffensperger is already probably working and the rest of working on ways to not count a bunch of those votes. But there's still a consent decree in place there that prevents them from using signature matching to just throw ballots out of hand. Hey, Todd, I am going to give other folks a chance here. It's been a great conversation, my friend, but I've seen several people call in since.
Right. Let me say this real quick. I think you were right when you brought up about what happened here. It's the subjective signature, and we have no curing, so you don't even know if your vote got thrown out.
Right.
And thanks for taking my call, and everyone supporting you, and everything's good.
Thanks for making it, my friend. You take care.
All right.
Bye now. Our buddy Todd calling from South Carolina, Stan. And do I have you, Scott? No, apparently not. Okay, let's try again. Maybe we got Scott this time. Hey, Scott. Hey, before we get going, let me note that we are 2 hours and 15 minutes into the program. And so far, Bruce's Memorial Challenge remained until this moment untouched. It just got touched, and that's tremendously helpful. Let me just check here so I can give the appropriate thank you on this. And by the way, that's thanks to Will in Chicago. So we're 275 away from finishing that challenge. Thank you, Will. Thank you so kindly. And, God, what was I going to say? Ah, damn it. Hey, Steve in New York, can you use the stress line 844-843-4676 because Skype is being weird to me again and I can't merge two calls right now. So if you would do that, that would be immensely helpful. No, I know what I wanted to say. I wanted to say hi, because over the course of the weekend, I think we made some new friends, and at least I'm hoping we did. And if you happen to be out there and you happen to be listening, just know that I'm really thrilled to have you being part of this little community, and I hope you will enjoy your time here, because this is, as it has proven over the past few days, a most welcoming place and a good place. So with that having been said, oh, yay. Well, thank you. Jeremy just jumped back in, and so we are down to 265. Thank you, Jeremy. And by the way, I had a note from Jude in the Great Northwest. Always a delving dialogue with you and Todd. Thank you. I'm offering just a moment of reflective warmth to all. Hear, hear, Jude. Thank you. Oh, and Matt, hospital outbreak where I mentioned with the inflatable Christmas tree costume. Matt tells us a worker at that hospital died in addition to the outbreak. So basically, by one worker wanting to lighten the mood by wearing a costume, they infected their co-workers and killed one. What a horror that is. It is just a horror. And how does something like that, I mean, does the whirring of the pump not, you know, clue, but maybe not, you know, I don't know. But yeah. Hey, Scott.
Hey baby, what's happening?
Are you an olive eating fool?
No, I've not cracked open the, they're in there chilling. As soon as they arrived, I unboxed them and put them in the refrigerator. And thanks to Dave, number 11, for sending me two jars of olives.
They are fantastic. I've eaten a lot of green olives in my time. I have never eaten green olives even remotely as good as this. These things are fantastic.
Tonight may be the night, because they've been chilling since Saturday, I guess. And they're probably cold enough now to just jump right in.
Well, don't be afraid to just munch on them. Watch out for the pits. But since you've got that New Year's Eve martini thing, let me just make one suggestion.
Okay.
Make a dirty martini with some of that olive juice.
Oh, I always make my martinis dirty.
Well, no dirty martini will ever live up to a dirty martini made with Henry's olive juice. It's just a fact.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned martinis. This was...
You know my favorite martini poem, right?
No.
From Dorothy Parker?
I love
to drink martinis. Two, at the very most. Three, and I'm under the table. Four, and I'm under the host.
Yes, that would be a Dorothy Parkerism.
Yes, it is.
Indeed. But thanks to Dave for sending those. It's very thoughtful, totally unexpected. Had I not been given a cryptic heads up, I would have been totally surprised.
Well, I was operating under orders.
Oh, yeah. Okay, well, that's all right. I like surprises. But speaking of martinis, this is the first time in, 5 or 6 years I managed a New Year's Eve night, New Year's Eve. I'm sitting here watching something on TV in the recliner in the full back position, and I slept through New Year's Eve. I woke up quarter after two in the new year in the morning. And I said, well, it's too late to have a New Year's Eve martini because it's already New Year's Day in the wee hours of that. So I didn't do a martini at all. I thought about having a rum and Coke. Didn't do that either. So I'm just the cheapest date possible. I mean, it's they're going to take away my drinker's card. But
you don't want that to happen.
Well, maybe I'll have one tonight because January 4th is always a special day for me. And longtime Horn listeners will recognize the name instantly. Today is the anniversary of the birth on January 4th, 1880, of my great-great-aunt Emma. So maybe I'll hoist a few.
Well, how about that? Great-great-aunt Emma shared a birthday with my grandfather Kincaid.
There you go. What year? Do you recall?
He was born on this day in 1894. This is his 126th birthday.
Okay. Well, she was born in 1880 in good old Alexandria, Virginia. So maybe tonight I'll crack open one jar of the martini olives and just have a couple of that on it. I'll be out in the yard howling at the moon if I really get going with this deal. But
God, those green olives are so good with some good blue cheese. Jesus.
Yeah, I liked I forget what the brand name is, but there's a brand that you can buy in the store that has various stuffed olives.
Mazzetta.
Mazzetta, yes. And I love that. I think last year I got the blue cheese ones.
Even better when you use your own blue cheese because they hold the flavor.
Yeah. We got some
recently over at the little store in Fayetteville that was this lovely Wisconsin blue cheese, but it was also infused with chili pepper. Woo!
Ooh, 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 ooh. A taste treat to be sure. But, I think I didn't have my White Castles the other night, so maybe tonight I'll have White Castles and B&M baked beans. And then let that settle in, and then I'll have a couple of martinis. I may show up in the pages of Police Gazette if I play it right, you know? So anyway, thank you, Dave, for the olives. And there's another thing. On Emma's birthday. I wish everybody had that type of influence as a young person that I had. I think that set me on the course of my life, being a fun lover and a truth seeker and a truth teller. Because she, one of her favorite sayings when people would bemoan the fact of things being the way that they were and wanting something else to occur, she'd say, well, wish in one hand and shit in the other.
And see which one fills up first.
And you can't help but love a person like that, you know?
That's one of the secret code words at the Horn. I mean, I use that a lot.
Yeah. Well, I know. But thank you, Bob. And I know that I was on the Thursday New Year's Eve front porch. But thank you, Bob, for sharing with us elements of your journey that must have been difficult. Being your most true, authentic self and being upfront about it is hard for some people to do. And the fact that you took a step, you know, literally on faith, that Indiana Jones movie that Sean Connery was in, where you have to take that step of faith.
I was thinking exactly about that, where you take the step out into thin air and wait,
exactly.
There's something. That very same scene came into my mind. Great minds.
Yeah. Well, that's what your revelation, for lack of a better term, on Thursday was. And there may be a book or a film, a documentary in your story. We don't know.
Oh, please, just, Jesus, no.
A book anyway. God, when you look at how the bookshelves are loaded with just the right. trees and, that
and,
have
and,
died.
And a transgender hillbilly is going to compete with that? I mean, come on, Scott.
Well, I'd buy it. That's your sweet ass. I'd buy it. And read it, too. But anyway, that just did my heart a world of good. That it in a year when it's hard to hold on to any hope or any faith of anything working out well and being positive, you kind of put the capper, a positive capper, on the end of 2020 and something that we can latch on to in terms of just there's nothing better than authenticity, you know, and just being exactly who you are. And if people don't like it, they'll just have to get over it, you know. And that's a good example, you know, to put out there to the world and the universe at large. And if more people would be their most positive and appropriate, truest, authentic selves, they would get a lot of bad stuff handled. Because nonsense and horseshit cannot live in close proximity to people being ruthlessly authentic. It won't, it can't stay. It's like you take the notion of sin, you know, sin and goodness cannot coexist in close proximity. Well, being yourself, your most true and authentic self, you know, the others will flee from you because they can't stand to be around such reality. You know, am I on to something or am I just talking out of my butt again?
I think you are.
You know, because and we owe it to one another. I'm not a big person on resolutions, but if I were to make a resolution, it would be to be even more real than before. And I, you know, and it wasn't always first nature for me to be upfront. And I've shared about a lot of stuff with the Horn family in these various calls over the years that I've never shared anywhere else, you know. And it's good for you. It's good for you because it restores your confidence. And God knows after this past year, we could use a little confidence. We could use a lot of fucking confidence. And a tip of the old rabbit ears to Todd. I just love the hell out of his call. I always learn something when Todd calls in.
I do too.
And he knows his stuff. And you're no slouch either, by the way. So anyway, I don't know that I have a whole lot more to share, but just Happy New Year. Happy 2021 to everyone. We're counting down the days, boys and girls, you know, to the 20th.
Well, okay, and you're getting some amen and hallelujah.
Oh, good.
Scott, you bet your sweet ass I'd buy the book. See, this is the problem we have in this world. You haven't been a woman for 36 hours, and Scott's already commenting on your sweet ass. What's wrong with us?
Well, I've been a connoisseur of sweet ass for many, many moons. No moons, yeah, that too. But the moon over what? Moon over
Jeremy's already working on a title. You could call it the Trans Blakely Hillbilly.
Well, that might work. That might work. You could be a movie of the week or something on a Lifetime channel. You just don't know, Bob.
Oh, and the arrest of Enrique Tarrio gets more fun. That I was talking about with Todd. Police say at the time of his arrest, Tarrio was found to be in possession of two high-capacity firearm magazines. He's been additionally charged with possession of high-capacity feeding device. That's from Mark in Florida. Yes, good. And apparently there was some civil paper waiting for him, too, because the church whose flag he stole or sign he stole and then burnt in front of the church is suing him for stealing their property and probably some other civil torts as well. That may be how we make the Proud Boys go the fuck away.
Would that be an arson charge in there as well? I mean,
well, I don't, you know, that's the weird part, you know, setting a fire in the middle of a street in D.C. I'd think they frown on that. But so far, no. And by the way, Jude just jumped in.
Yeah.
And took us down to 245 with a note saying women standing is sending $20 in honor of Aunt Emma and my grandfather Kincaid. Thank you, Jude. And Scott in Wisconsin then turned around and just took us down to 145 to go. So we got 145 to go in 30 minutes, and we will have, yes, 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 we will have Bruce's Memorial Challenge met, courtesy of Chris and Labor Man, our buddy Gary in New Mexico, and Ralph's in Wisconsin. Thank you. Thank you, Scott. And thank you to Jude, and thank you, Jeremy. Thank you, Will, in Chicago. Thank you all so very much.
One more thing before I go, and maybe we can squeeze another call in after me. One of the things that you and Todd were talking about had to do with Trump and his crazy cronies wanting to fuck up our electoral system. I'll issue a warning. They won't be smart enough to listen to it, but here's the warning. If you're a person who is a professional politician, and your livelihood and future, professional future, depends on getting elected within a system, you don't want to throw too much sand into the gears of the system, because yeah, you might keep others from getting elected that you don't like, but you might fuck it up to the point where it won't even work for you. Does that make any sense at all?
Yeah, it does. They don't know what they're fucking with, and that's what that goofball Massey was talking about. Hey, you're going to wind up getting rid of the Electoral College, and then where are we going to be?
And, I was as surprised as you were. They listed like 12 or 13 GOP senators who are going to, you know, put on their little show on electoral vote day in the hallowed halls of Congress. And I'm looking at this and I'm saying, well, you people are just this system, flaws and all, has served us more or less well for lo these many years. And you just, it's un-American to fuck with it deliberately. I can see doing something by mistake or not meaning to, but to deliberately set out to fuck it up after all these years, these people are worse than Joseph R. McCarthy, and he was pretty goddamn bad, you know? I was watching a documentary about McCarthy the other night, and I'm thinking, good God, he's probably spinning in his grave. These people are pulling tricks that he never thought of, you know?
Yeah.
And they're becoming a real menace that is even worse than the phony menace, by and large, that McCarthy was pushing, you know, 60 years ago, you know, 1950. And he got his start in the late 40s. A lot of craziness has come out of Wisconsin, I'll tell you that.
Oh.
They make some mighty fine cheese, but man, some of their politicians.
Yeah, don't even think of competing with the cheese curds from Ellsworth Creamery. I mean, you just lose. But woo, yeah.
Anyway, I luckily there's.
But
not
I mean, when it comes to crazy, Marsha, goodness, Blackburn of Tennessee is taking all comers. I mean, she will not brook contention or competition, because she, just in case, you know, Louis Asparagus Gohmert should go to his long home or something, she's ready to pick up the mantle in the Senate of the United States of Queen of the Crazy People. Because she's a lulu. And now, remember she did her star turn during the impeachment. God, that was a year ago. It seems like 10. But you remember Elise Stefanik from New York? I think so, yeah. Who Nitwit Nero crushed on a little bit, I think. Yeah, she's going to join the sedition caucus. She said, "I do not take this action lightly.
Tens of millions of Americans are rightly concerned that the 2020 election featured unprecedented voting irregularities, unconstitutional overreach by unelected state officials and judges, ignoring state election laws, and a fundamental lack of ballot integrity and security. All of which are fucking lies. It was the cleanest election we've had in recent memory.
Yes. And I listened to that recording last night from on the Washington Post site. I sat here and listened to that fool Trump rant and rave and just spread nonsense for the better part of an hour. I didn't time it. I took one for the team and listened. One of the many stupid, crazy claims that he made language. It eludes me. You can't come up with words enough to describe just how batshit crazy that tape was, or recording, digital recording. And one of the things was, at one point, he's talking about 3,000 ballots in Georgia that were shredded, or 3,000 pounds.
Yeah, 3,000 pounds of ballots in Fulton County.
Why is he even worried about Fulton County votes? Jesus, well, Fulton County did not. God.
But what I'm saying is how unreal, what unreality he dwells in. In that county, I'll give you a dollar for every pound of ballots that were shredded. 3,000 pounds is a ton and a half. Are there that many? How much are those ballots etched in stone? They're in Fulton County. I mean, you would be hard.
Yeah, they're little pressed. They're little pieces of broken pottery with Trump scratched on them. That just like the ancient Greeks used.
Well, I'm just applying logic. I don't know hardly anything about Fulton County, Georgia, other than it's a county called Fulton in Georgia. Okay, but I would be. How many people would have to live there of voting age? How many votes are in a pound of votes? I mean, how many ballots are in a pound? And then multiply that by 2,000 and then add another half ton of ballots. There's not that many. In all of elections throughout history in the state of Georgia, I don't think there have been 3,000 pounds worth of ballots. You listen to the guy and...
No offense. No offense, Scott, but it's kind of fun to hear you struggle with this.
Well, it's like you could get a fourth grader armed only with a handheld calculator and run a few numbers and see how stupid that assertion was. Some years ago wrote an essay, "They're Taking Our Guns Away." And at the time there was 200 million guns in the hands of private citizens.
Yeah, it's up by about 100 million now.
Yeah, I know. But this was like in the 90s, back during the time of Oklahoma City bombing. And I worked it out. I got a calculator and worked it out and checked my math and everything. Even if they were to round up 100 guns a minute, it would still take decades to round up all the guns. And the point of the essay was, anybody who believes that nonsense is just stupid, just beyond stupid, because the numbers don't work.
Right. Well, so Jeremy just wrote in, subject line, ballots. They were written on the last pieces of the Ten Commandments. Otherwise, Trump would have used them as TP, since melanoma knows better than butt play. What's happening to this program? Thank you very kindly. To Kevin and to Pat, we are now down to $95 to go. We got about 20 minutes to finish it, and we've gotten under $95 to go to finish Bruce's Memorial Challenge and qualify for those $300 of matching dollars. So that's humongous. Thank you to Pat, and thank you very kindly as well to Kevin. Thanks so much. And by the way, Jude says, Scott offers a clear and down-to-earth wisdom. He's a sage. Hear, hear. You're a sage.
Well, I've told people for years that I am wise beyond my chronological years. I must have lived, well, I actually know this from a psychic friend of mine, Pat, in Kansas City, who I studied with in the 80s. She said that she doesn't know how old I am, but she says I'm a pretty old soul for some of the stuff that I come up with. And boy, it's, I don't recommend it to everybody, because you take, you know, through multiple lifetimes, and I believe in that stuff, you know, you can go through all manner of crap to get to the good part. And, you know, it, any of it that I can share with folks and help brighten their day and you know, clear crap out of their pathway, then go me, you know? But I don't know. I just can't wait till the 20th. And there will still be a residue of Trump and his crony.
Oh, it's not going to all go away, but it will eventually fade. And by the way, just a quick update. And I want to, you know, I want to mention this because we had the story previously. We speculated that the Wisconsin, since Wisconsin came into this, and I love Wisconsin, but since Wisconsin came into this, well, the Ozaukee County District Attorney Adam Garrell has had a hearing, and pharmacist Stephen Brandenburg has been arrested. He's being held on only $10,000 bond. He's been ordered to turn over his firearms.
Is this the guy that destroyed the vaccines?
Jeez. And he did so. Wait a minute. I mean, you look at a picture of this guy, and it's like, yeah, you spent too much time on Breitbart. He just kind of has the look. by the way, Don in British Columbia says, Scott's a sage. Better a sage than a poultry seasoning.
Well, that too. I'll...
Stephen Brandenburg said that he destroyed the vaccines because he believed they were unsafe. Okay. Stop it, unsafe, Mr. Brandenburg. Just stop there, please. You know, because the defense counsel's going, why didn't somebody? Jesus Christ! How do I defend this guy? He said they were unsafe, and they could change people's DNA.
Oh.
All of it.
Did he believe that there were little demons in each one of them?
Well, no, but the first person I thought of was the guy who called Washington Journal and told Steve or Pedro or who the hell ever that there was liquid barcodes in the vaccine.
Little digital demons, Bob. You've got to beware of the digital demons into your bloodstream. You just can't have it. You just can't have it.
Yep. Anti-vaxxer, maggot, nut job. And so, I don't understand why he's only being held on $10,000 bond, because given the number of vaccines he destroyed, he essentially was potentially consigning 500 people to fucking death. I'm holding that dude as a potential mass murderer.
The 500 bottles, little vials of vaccine have got to have a retail price. So, I mean,
there's got to be a potential, some form of larceny charge in there.
Yeah, you would think.
So, I don't know.
Well, one good thing about Wisconsin, Les Paul came from Wisconsin.
Oh, lots of good people came from Wisconsin.
Oh, yeah. But just off the top of my head, old Les Paul, Jesus, there was a genius.
Oh, one of the things in the few times I've been up there, I always wanted to go see Taliesin. You know, the Frank Lloyd Wright. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Now, see, that guy was a fucking genius.
Okay, this is good. Jeremy in Vermont says, "Little digital demons is a hairy cowbell, Bob." I almost laughed my K95 off. So okay.
Yeah, jeez. I don't know. I just, I calls them like I sees them, Bob. So, well, anyway, I just sometimes don't know what to say. And I sure use a lot of words not knowing what I'm saying. But some of the words work.
Well, you know, I mean, you're kind of like you're kind of like Sheriff. What's the sheriff's name? And Slim Pickens in Blazing Saddles.
Oh yeah.
Talking to Hedley Lowe. Hedley. God darn it, Mr. Lamar, you use your mouth prettier than a $20 whore. So,
yeah.
There you go. Hey, I'm going to ring off real quick because I think we've got a call coming in from Wisconsin. So, later,
right.
Scott.
All right, Bob. Take care.
Bye. Do I have you?
Yeah.
Is that you, Scott?
Yeah, how you doing?
I'm doing good. Thank you so much. I saw what you just did. You knocked out the rest of it. My God, man, that's awesome.
Well, had a little Christmas money. What the heck, eh?
Yeah. Well, what the heck?
Hey, I love you, man.
Oh, I tell you what. Thank you so much. It is returned in equal measure.
Ah, shoot. You know, it is what it is. You know, hey, we need you here, brother.
Well, I'm gonna stay as long as I possibly can till they run me out, so.
Yeah, I wish I had a circuit that I could, to palm some shit into some of these people's heads around here, but, you know, hey, it's good.
So but I gotta ask you, is the Wisconsin news all abuzz with this crazy fucker up there? The crazy pharmacist?
Crazy? Oh, no, I haven't heard about that yet.
No,
yes, where they...
Yeah, he was afraid the vaccine was going to alter people's DNA. Woohoo! You know?
You know, it's really strange to where that doesn't even register. Things are so fucking crazy. It's nuts.
Oh, I've seen some pictures. I saw people lining up to get on a bus to go to a holiday party in Wisconsin. Not a mask in sight. You know, what the hell? Let's just let's get us some of that herd immunity.
Yeah. No, I heard about that, you know, I don't know. I apologize. I'm not real good about that, but...
No, it's okay.
No, I just had a call. I just, arguing with a guy on... No, I... Trying to buy some, I don't know how you say it. Home canned or homemade or... whatever sauerkraut from a friend of mine that I know makes her own sauerkraut.
Oh my God, that's got to be fantastic.
Yeah, and been trying to do that, and my two oldest boys, my old boy is 40, or well, 42, but he used to like my mom's macaroni and tomato. Sounds simple as shit, but
I bet it was magic.
It's really good, you know, especially when you use homemade tomato juice and you let it simmer and
home canned tomato juice is fantastic. The closest I can get, Scott, is an outfit out of Indiana called Red Gold, and they've got a not from concentrate tomato juice.
Oh.
But the home canned is pretty special. Listen, if the sauerkraut thing doesn't work out, I got to give you a place to order from.
Okay.
30 Acre Farm. Let me see if it's farm or farms. Yeah, it's 30acrefarm.com.
30acrefarms.com.
No, I think it's 30 Acre Farm. Not plural. Just 30, okay. Yeah, 30acrefarm.com. And it's certified organic. And they make some ass-kicking kraut. And when it arrives, like good kraut should be, it's still alive.
Yeah.
I mean, it's bubbling. And, oh, it's good.
I used to help my grandma make kraut. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, I mean, I got a kraut juice problem. I mean, I think it's perfectly acceptable to take about a little 8-ounce glass and fill it with ice-cold kraut juice and just sit there and nip at it.
We used to just grab it out of the quart jar with our fingers and just...
Oh.
Oh, God.
Yeah, nothing like it. Did your grandma ever pickle corn on the cob?
No, I don't think she did, but I remember her slicing it, and she put it in front of you, and it was the best thing ever. I don't know. You know, I think a while ago we were sitting there talking about generations lost, and, you know, I grew up with family that was born in 1908 till 1938. And I'll tell you, I had the best donuts. I had the best kraut. I had the best. Jeez, I was so fucking lucky. You know, I'm sitting there. I remember sitting around the kitchen table and I don't know. My Aunt Edna, she was like a Rosita Riveter.
Yeah.
She had big frickin' arms. And, you know, she just was just, oh, she was pretty outspoken. I know she hated Reagan. But, no, just listening. And that's what kind of molded me into where I'm in right now. Listen to my grandparents, you know, Uncle Harvey. He was on the Bataan Death March.
Yes.
He survived that. And, you know, you sit there, Uncle Oscar hit the beach of Normandy. You know, he drank bourbon like water.
Well, you know, back in the days before the term PTSD had ever been developed, and before we ever heard the term self-medication, there was a whole lot of people came back from Second World War and self-medicated because of the PTSD that they didn't have a name for. I'm pretty sure my dad was one of them.
Well, I know my dad was one, or my grandpa was one of them. My dad came back from Korea, and he was never fucking, he wasn't right. I loved him, you know. I mean, he'd go into these spurts where he just. My mom was a beauty queen, and he'd call her ugly or whatever. You know what I mean? It's all messed up. He'd just go into one of these things, and the next day he's worshiping. You know, I was just. Yeah, it's, you know, and we sit there and talk about it, and it's just, I don't know.
It's hard, man. It is hard.
Yeah. Well, and they wonder why 22 soldiers a day commit suicide, but there's another 50 people outside of that are committing suicide because things ain't good. You know, it ain't just. Things just ain't good. And, you know, what do? We spend $2 trillion bailing out millionaires who ain't going to fucking miss a meal. And we fight about $600 a check. And, you know, you sit there and think about these Proud Boys. You know, they're all fucking delusional fucking assholes. But the thing is, they should be on our side.
Oh, but they're not going to be. And the sad part of it is that most of them know next to nothing of America's history. And so, you know, the Iron Brigade that young Arthur MacArthur led at, God, what was it, Chickamauga?
Yeah. You know,
those little pissants from the Proud Boys have no idea of what suffering or dedication or sacrifice is. And they would have been the first ones running at the first shot fired in anger 160 years ago.
Well, you look at okay, then go up to Ike Eisenhower. He never ever saw battle. He was a lieutenant colonel at the beginning of the war. All of a sudden he's a 5-star general running the whole European theater. You want to know why? That's why he got elected a president.
Well, yeah, America loves its generals. I mean, he became president for the same reason Ulysses Grant became president.
Yeah, but Ike was a whole different person. Ike was actually like a good man. That's why Grandpa always told me, he said, I voted for Ike, and he voted for Kennedy. And he goes, Ike was a good man. Nixon, not so much. But all of a sudden, he wins all his shit. I don't get it. Is American people that stupid?
After 40 years of dumbing down, thanks to the modern so-called Republican Party, deliberately trying to make people more stupid, yes, we are. We absolutely are. I mean, the numbers break out and kind of prove the point.
Well, I had when I was in the Star Major Academy, I had to do a battle analysis on certain company, on certain country, and mine was Colombia. Have you ever heard of the FARC?
Yes.
FAR.
Oh, yeah.
It is the people fighting against oligarchy. But they are like the biggest enemy. And I had to rewrite my presentation to fit our philosophy, if you will, to pass the course. And the FARC is just people fighting out. You know, you sit there and look at it. I was in 335th Regiment. You know, we got a polar bear on our crest. And the 335th Regiment actually fought in Russia against the uprising of the people. And if you look at the uprising of the people, all it was, now, Stalin was a fucking dictator, piece of shit, but the absolute theory, it was the workmen fighting against authority. And you know, Wallace, you got Blair Mountain, you got all kinds of crap, especially West Virginia. You got a lot of things that you can relate to.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's just not a whole lot of people who will reference, you know, something like Blair Mountain in West Virginia, which, by the way, has its 100th anniversary this year.
Yeah. It should be a sad dedication to where... But that's where the labor move, you know. Oh, yeah, if you like a 40-hour week, thank the communists. If you want overtime, thank the socialists. You know, these people don't really, nobody really.
Yeah, and but Scott, that has changed so much. And, I mean, I'm not differing with you. But it's a hard and bitter pill to swallow in a state like West Virginia when you look at the numbers out of the 2020 election and you realize that 7 out of 10 members of organized labor voted for Trump.
Yeah.
I mean, that's an organizational systemic failure. That's a failure to educate at the very ground level. You know, chickens don't vote for Colonel Sanders, and union workers should never vote Republican. Not now, anyway.
Well, I got two guys in my union. I'm a carpenter. We got two guys in my union that vote Republican consistently. Oh, these guys shouldn't. I got mine. Fuck you.
Well, yeah, it was from my buddy in Wisconsin, Bruce, who is no longer with us. He's the one that gave me Igamfu. I got mine. Fuck you.
Yeah, and that's how everybody feels. And, you know, it's, I don't know, I've never understood that. I just haven't.
It's the product of deliberate miseducation. It's what you get out of 30 years of Rush Limbaugh pouring poison into people's ears. I mean, a long time ago, we had a union communications worker who came out to string some internet line, and he was a good liberal, and he was excited about what we were doing. And he said, "Man, I'll get in a truck in the morning and turn the radio on, and the damn thing's on the right wing radio station, because the guy that had the truck before me was listening to Limbaugh."
Yeah, and he's in our tax bracket, and he thinks, "Oh shit, if I listen to this long enough, I'll be a millionaire." Fucking idiot. No, I just.
I forget who came up with the phrase, but you know, we've got too many people out there who consider themselves to be temporarily embarrassed millionaires.
Well, you know, look at it, Jeff Bezos. You see that fucking corn-headed looking motherfucker? He's gonna own this whole country, and he don't care. It'd be different, you know. Okay, we got somebody that owns this country that cares about people. That motherfucker don't care. And he don't pay no taxes. He don't. Ah, shit. You know, Tommy Thompson, I remember when I was in the reserves, you know, that first about $1,200, I think it was, wasn't taxed. Tommy Thompson comes in there. Oh, let's tax these guys. Okay, so I'm paying fucking taxes on my fucking reserve pay. You know, it's like, oh, yeah, but, oh, we're paying for that. Oh, yeah. But everybody else ain't paying for shit. Fucking Republicans, I don't know. I don't dislike them so much. It's just that they don't get it. They don't understand that, you know, okay, there's crime in Chicago, but there's crime in Alabama. Let's see that. There's crime in Mississippi. There's people dying there. Why? Because people are desperate and stealing shit. And I don't know. You sit there and look at, oh, look, she's using food stamps and she's buying a fucking steak. Well, fucking A.
Oh, that's Louis Asparagus Gohmert complaining about all those food stamp people eating all the crab legs. Oh, God.
Well, you know, I remember we used to go out probably twice a year, maybe. And I remember we used to dress up in the best clothes we had. And we'd go out, and Mom and Dad would order us tenderloin on toast. It was like about a 4-ounce tenderloin steak on it was basically a sandwich. And you got a bowl of lettuce with whatever you wanted, and mom and dad. But we would go out, and this was like a supper club. We'd wear suits. And that we were somebody. You know, so, you know, like people on food stamps, if they want to go out there and just for one night be somebody, that's kind of cool. But, no, I grew up, like, in a pit. I'm not really good off right now, but I'm not bad off. So it's all cool. But I've been to the bottom. And I'm not. I hope everybody makes it out of there.
Yeah.
I just wish everybody'd make it out of there. I've been to the bottom. And no, I'm not. I'm not at the bottom. But I know what it's like.
Yeah, yeah.
I've slept. I had a 78 Ford truck. And, you know, I mean, I slept so many nights in that fucking truck. And, God, I don't want anybody else to have to do that shit, especially up here in Wisconsin. It's fucking cold. But, no, nobody should have to do that shit. And no,
indeed.
It's just a good thing, man. I think everybody should, you know, we all should have a, they talk about the American dream. Yeah, what the fuck is the American dream? You know, just not having, no, it's good. It's just, sorry, Bob.
That's okay, Scott. No worries at all, man. No worries at all.
Nah, you know what I mean, though. It's just been at the bottom, and hey, it's all cool. No, I'm not at the bottom. And I don't think everybody, no. I think, I don't know how to say this, bud. I've been at the bottom. And I hope everybody gets up, man.
Well, our chance is coming. We got to get this asshole out of the White House and give Biden and Harris a chance. And I hope we won't. I hope our side won't start gooning on them because everybody doesn't give, or everybody doesn't find that on January the 21st after they're inaugurated that there's a unicorn tethered to a post in their front yard. This is going to be hard work, and this is going to take time, isn't it, Scott?
Shit, we got fucking 10 years. A fucking undoing how bad this shit has got. We need at least 6 or 7.
Yeah, like I said, this is there's been so much damage done. This is not the work of a term or a two-term president. This is the work of a generation. It honestly is. Well, I'll tell you what, Scott, I can't thank you enough for the help this evening. I've got to roll it on out of here, but please stay warm, stay safe. And everything necessary that it takes to avoid this damn plague and get through out the other end. Because, well, we want you and all that you care about to do that.
Take care of my grandchildren. And we're good. Take care, man.
All right.
Love you.
You be good, Scott. We love you, my brother. Bye now.
Bye.
That's Scott calling from Wisconsin. And thanks to Scott, we finished off tonight's Memorial Challenge for Bruce, also of Wisconsin, formerly Michigan. And so we go into tomorrow with no hole to fill in, and that is freaking fantastic. Thanks to all of you who jumped in. Let's see, a couple of notes on the way out the door. I guess the stream has been blipping since about 10 till 8 our time, my time here. Sorry about that. Not much I can do about it, unfortunately. Couple of notes. Tape number 11 with noting that, you know, you can't hardly swing a dead cat without hitting a Medal of Freedom winner. I'm holding out for a Wurlitzer. Yeah, that's for the Wurlitzer. Yeah, because Devin Nunez is getting the Medal of Freedom, y'all. Hot damn. Man, those things aren't going to be worth the quarter you have to put in the gumball machine to get them before long. Ooh, that's exciting. Dave tells me that Henry's making sauerkraut. I haven't tried it yet. I'm a kimchi guy myself, but hey, it's Henry. Try it. I got it. We got to have the root. Oh, wait. Time out. Are you saying Henry makes kimchi? Shut the front door. Oh, that'd be something. And a note coming in from our pal Cynthia in the Bay Area. Just a note for people who might not understand our transitions. During mine, I met people who thought it great that I was trans. Their acceptance of me was great, but that wasn't why I transitioned. I didn't do this because I wanted to be a transsexual. I did this to correct as best as medically possible the mistake nature made with my body so that my mind and body would match. Amen. There can be no more cruel mistake of nature than to stick a male or female mind in the body of the opposite sex. Being in that position is torture, usually suffered in silence until you can't take it any longer. You either come out or commit suicide. Resolving it by coming out is deserving of celebration, as it is so freeing, but I have never met anyone who did this because they thought it would be great to be transsexual. No. Sorry, that's a big no. The other thing that I experienced was a sudden realization that for many people who accepted me, they also looked at me as a form of zoo. I mean, it was like, what good is my party if I don't have a transsexual there? After a while, you realize it and it gets old. I don't think I'm going to have to worry about that here, Cynthia, because, you know, I'm not big on the party list, and I don't think we're that popular yet. And as it got old, Cynthia says, I moved from being a transsexual in the room to being a woman in the room, which is why I transitioned in the first place. To be sure, I was lucky in that I looked good enough to pass. I've seen photos. She was freaking gorgeous. Still is. And on the rare occasions when I did come out to people, I was shocked to realize they didn't know, in spite of my male voice. And so I stopped telling people. I didn't need to. I just don't go there with people, and why should I even let them define me as anything other than a woman? And that's really freeing. I'm waiting for that freedom. I don't know if I'm ever going to get there, but I know that I have to take the ride a lot longer than I've been so far. The middle of the month will be 4 months for me. And there's a whole lot of stuff that you don't even start thinking about until you hit, like, year two. And it's been such a squirrely experience trying to just get my hormones right that, well, I'll have blood drawn again, I think, on the 15th, and we'll find out if, yay, I finally crossed over the 100 mark on estrogen. We talked about a lot of this on the program. If y'all want to go and check it out, Agnes and I did 2 hours worth of broadcasting, live broadcasting. Annette. See, Agnes was a means of me trying to protect her and my family. Because when we started this radio show, I was more than a little bit nervous about the potential for threats and violence that might come with it. but she and I did 2 hours of broadcasting with Terry and Nikki, and some of it wasn't easy, but it was liberating, and it was brutally honest. And so if you want to find the archive of it on Facebook, you can go to Trans Talk Raw. I think there is an audio-only podcast. Kevin in Colorado Springs had asked about that, and I'll try to find the link for that and send it along, or maybe we'll even post it on the Horn main page, headon.live. It is, as they say, a journey, and I'm looking forward to continuing on it. And again, I thank each and every one of you for your kind and continuing compassion and support. There has been an outpouring since Thursday. And for me, Annette, it has been remarkable. Remarkable. Yeah, there probably is a book in it. I had time to write it, but I do 3 hours of radio every evening. So that. So here we are, a little over time, but that's not unusual for around here. We'll see. I didn't run Nitwit Nero's audio. It didn't seem like there was a hell of a lot of point. If you're into self abuse, he hasn't even started yammering yet. Right now, Trader Tot is still babbling, and I'm not going to play him either. So thanks everybody. Thanks to each and every one of you who helped us finish off, meet and finish Bruce's Memorial Challenge. Thank you to Gary and to Ralphs and to Chris for making that challenge possible at the beginning of every month. Thank you. And yes, Jeremy says there is an audio-only version of the Trans Talk Raw podcast. I'm a subscriber. So is it transtalkraw.com? I'm not. Let me just look here so that we can eliminate any questions. Yes, there is. transtalkraw.com. And there's a link right there to the audio podcast. So, wow. And let me see, is it? Oh, I'm just trying to. But anyway, I have a feeling I'm going to be going back and listening to a lot of them. So anyway, it is there. And thank you all for keeping this program afloat. Thanks to our subscribers at Patreon and PayPal. Thank you to our a la carte contributors and those of you who participate in one or more or all of the above. Thank you to each and every one of you who shares your precious finite time engaging in this long-running conversation. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve. Steve, I don't know how Miss Karen manages, but if I were y'all, I wouldn't leave home for 2 weeks now because of where this rally's being held. Jesus Christ, the Rona's going to be running wild. I'm looking at the crowd right now, and if you had a nickel for every mask that's being worn there, you'd have, well, a nickel. Maybe. Thanks to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Remember, brand new Fresh Malloy on the way at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The best place to listen to the first run of Malloy is at headon.live. Thank you, and to John Fox in Australia. Thank you, and please continue to heal up, and I hope the pain subsides. Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Cold River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. Oh, and by the way, Jeremy tells me you can find Trans Talk Raw on Apple Podcasts as well. So it's there. Always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Please stay safe. The best way to stay safe is to stay home. If you can't stay home and you have to be out and about, well, wear your mask, wear your gloves, wash your hands, don't touch your face, use hand sanitizer liberally. Maintain your social distance 10 feet for people wearing masks, and you can't be far enough away from someone who isn't. For God's sakes, if somebody comes towards you saying, no, that vaccine, it ain't safe, it changes your DNA, wrong accent, avoid that person like the plague, because they are. Later, y'all.